stand up, turn back on the shrewd trend. The more side ever last. I do so. I just so. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try. The next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, critical and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners.
It's the black people of America. The real.
To time for an awakening. On Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live feed from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is there also. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening. And also interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 8:08 in the city of Philadelphia, and it's Freestyle Friday mode here on Time for an Awakening. Anything that's on your mind that you've been thinking about this past week, the floor and the time is yours. You can give us a call and talk about it at 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word. from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and R Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. You know, I'm doing fine. It's this Friday evening here. There's some interesting things going on. You know that I'd like to share with you later on. That's just interesting as far as dealing with, you know, when you have to deal with what's going on. I'm calling it on the ground with younger folks, and they're, you know, calling you out for support, advice, some strategy sessions. But that's inspiring at this stage. So that's one thing. But you know, Elliot, I have to use this moment to, you know, I don't know, did you know, we all have heard about the cyclone that happened in southern, the southeast, southeast part of the continent of Africa. Yeah. Cyclone Idia, I think that's how they say it. Idia.
I'm not sure the name. Okay.
The amount of folks that it, you know, affected in Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Malawi, rather. I think that these natural disasters, natural catastrophes, you know, we know what happened with Katrina, and we understand that that could have somewhat been prevented, even though the event itself, as far as the devastation on their people. But I think the cyclone, because they're saying that this is like something that's the worst since in the last 20 years, 19 years, nothing of this magnitude has come through on the continent like this, and the amount of people are affected. So I just wanted to, I think that, you know, wanted the Time for Awakening audience just to, you know, give their acknowledgement and support in whatever kind of way. But I also wanted to be able to bring up in that it's an indication of what we can do when what we should do when natural catastrophes affect us. And one thing I was looking for, you know, the African continent is a big place, and it's a lot of, you know, 55 different countries, and we talk about all the time how, you know, Africans are not working together. And in this case, we see, you know, I looked at the UN, the AU, the African Union, provided support. And it seemed that Tanzania president supplied a lot of initial support that isn't necessarily money, but by giving 24 tons of medicine, 200 tons of maize, and 14 tons of rice in order to deal with it. I think it was like 3 million people that was displaced by this natural catastrophe. So I just wanted to kind of raise that, you know, that natural catastrophe is 54 countries in Africa. Excuse me. The natural catastrophes can bring us together. Hopefully our political understanding with each other, our political relationship with each other, our understanding, our opposition will bring us together to work and support each other even before a devastating natural catastrophe occur. So I just want to, Freestyle Friday, open with that, the acknowledgement that Africans are, when it's necessary, we should be able to support and assist each other.
Well, one more thing to add on to that, Richard, is in the face of a common enemy, we need to develop strategies where we can successfully work together to defeat this common enemy and this this system of white supremacy and white domination that's here and that's on the continent, that's in the islands, that's in South America, that's in anywhere that you see black faces. You see that system perpetrated and set up. So there is a common enemy, and should be common strategies to defeat that enemy.
And you know, it shows itself, picking up on that point, you know, it shows itself in so many ways. I was and just looking, you know, the regular news of the week, and I ran across this article that struck me. You know, it's a, you know, in this political environment here in North America, they're, you know, they're constantly talking about Black women, right? And the power of Black women that they're, you know, achieving in the political sphere, but also as career women in the, you know, in different, what's that, positions in the bureaucracy of whether it be the state, as the woman who ran for state governor in Georgia, that may be her name just slipped me, that may be coming to be Biden's vice president.
Abrams.
Right? Yeah, Abrams. Mm-hmm. Or you know, this other Black women are, you know, you have finding more and more Black women that are in judges. And then I ran across this article that struck me, Elliot, if I may. St. Louis police officers raided the St. Louis Circuit Attorney's Office yesterday and seized the office server. Now, the St. Louis Circuit Attorney is a Black woman, Kim Gardner. And I'm like, I couldn't figure this out. And this is this article came out the 13th, March 13th. And it says the officers who arrived at 3 p.m. were executing a hotly contested search warrant related to a grand jury investigation into perjury during the blackmail case against former Governor Eric Gritchen. Say, okay, so she's looking into it, and she hired the, you know, this is the Kim Gardner. She hired the grand jury to look into, and she went in and got a ex-FBI agent to do some investigation on this ex-Gardner. Now, what did this ex-governor do, right? The ex-governor was accused of taking a new photo of a woman with whom he was having an affair as a safeguard against her telling anyone about the relationship. Okay, you know, he covering his tracks. Now, she's saying this action. And the reason I'm bringing it up, because it made me think about Miss Mosley, Marilyn Mosley, when the Freddie Gray case came up. You know how she tried to actually prosecute the officers that were involved in the Freddie Gray case? And remember how she like went through all the things to get within her purview as a attorney general, you know, to get the information for to prosecute these officers. And we remember how she had to eventually say that the judicial system, right? And this is where it ties to with the point that you made about in this system of white supremacy, right? These white men who are sitting in these places, the police union, the judges, they put such a resistance that she had to eventually come back and say she couldn't pursue it anymore. And now she's being sued by the officers for, you know, they're saying wrongfully being prosecuted. Mm-hmm. So they're putting out a suit against her. So in this case here, this Kim Gardner, who's a circuit attorney, she's going after this, and the thing is that the ex-governor perjured himself. So she's trying to get information in relationship to his perjury. And what she comes out is that a judge actually, to stop her in the investigation, puts out, gives the order to have her, the server with the information that they collected, taken from her. I don't know if I'm making sense, Elliot, but it shows that these women, these black women who are, and it may be women in general, but in this case, I'm looking at the black women who are trying to do their job in relationship to these supposedly powerful white men and finding systemic resistance. And where she says, in my decades of work in the criminal justice system, I have never seen a chief prosecutor treated this way by a court or a police department. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that makes sense, you know, but, and we had a situation here. Now, she wasn't black, but remember Kathleen King?
Yeah.
You know, who got, you know, when, and I know people are going to not like my language, hopefully, and I apologize, but when them Negroes was, you know, taking that little bit of money that they should have been taking in the state legislature, and they were, and knowing that they were set up by the Republicans, right, to put them under more control, they sent somebody in there and they gave them a couple $100 or gave them, I think one of them, was it the radio host minister? They gave her some jewelry.
Yeah, I think that was Travicourt that they gave the jewelry to.
Yeah, and when it came up that they were supposed to be, because this Kathleen King knew that they were set up, she wasn't going to prosecute the case. She wasn't going to pursue it. And, but, you know, at that point, they had another criminal, you know, kowtow, Seth Williams. Yeah, hell, you know, from Philadelphia. Now, this is at the state level, right? From Philadelphia, he pushed for her to be prosecuted. Now, she's spending between 10 and 23 months in prison right now, you know, for doing that. So, again, I'm raising that this is, you know, when we're talking about the reason why we need to be all on the same page, we, regardless of our different colors in relationship to our political ideology or even our goals, when we talk about as black people need to be on the same page, understanding what we're up against, we see that justice, you know, and the pursuit of justice don't mean anything to these people. And the only way we can actually be held together is when we are actually at least having, what is that thing called, operational unity. So that's why this here struck me, you know, to see that even this woman is pursuing a case and that, you know, and just, you know, recognizing that this here governor perjured himself. But because the power of white men in that city of St. Louis, and the police department supporting that, even though she has the position, they will go and do what they want to do. And we have to be conscious of that, cognitive of that, it seems to me. And that seems to go to the point that you're making about when we're dealing with the system of white supremacy, why we need to be at least have operational unity. That just struck me.
Well, you know, some of these officials that go into office, especially the black, well, that's what I'm talking about, the black elected officials, they're under some type of illusion of inclusion, and they can dispense the law evenly among everybody. You know, I don't know, you know, what type of household they came from or what type of type of education that they were influenced by. And I'm talking about the cultural and the national type of education. You know, to go in there assuming that the system is fair and they can dispense this stuff evenly, it doesn't work like that. That's why when you get in these offices, you need to do all you can to to funnel dollars, opportunities, everything that you can towards your community and towards your folks. That should be your main focus. But, you know, it's obvious to me that when these black elected officials go into office, they take that oath of office where they're sworn their first allegiance is to this country. And I don't even see their second allegiance is to their people. I think their second allegiance is to special interests. Distant third or maybe fourth is some type of obligation to their community and to their people. They take this office, oath of office, allegiance to this country, to this system, as over the top. They take it more seriously than white folks that go into these offices.
Mm.
Because they're concerned. White folks that go into these offices is basically concerned about their people.
Mm.
Black folks that go in there have to, you know, and you hear some of them say it, I'm concerned about all people. You know, come on with that. They take that stuff seriously. At least when white people say it, they're lying, and you know they are. But black people say
they're lying.
Well, yeah. Whenever they say that, you know, they're for all people, that's bull crap. And any black person that believes it need their head examined. But, you know, anybody with common sense or critical thinking knows that white folks are lying when they say that. But black folks take those statements seriously. Mm. They really think that they're representing or supposed to go in there and represent all people. It doesn't work like that. Some of them find that out before they leave office. Some of them don't care. And some of them do all they can to stay in office. So, you know, when you hear stuff like that, some of them get a wake-up call. Some of them realize what's going on, and some of them don't.
Hmm. Yeah, and it goes even to, you know, like, you know, right now the big thing about the 2020 election. And how that play, where does black people fall in as a part of the Democratic Party, with their, you know, the issues and having agendas and all that, and when you talk about allegiance, these candidates, the black ones and the ones who are in office, you make that dichotomy: are you supporting the party, or are you supporting the people? And I think things are becoming very crystallized, will become very crystallized again. And, you know, that raised the question. I just seen a Brookings report that come out in, you know, the article by William Frey in the 13th of March. You know that the convention is being selected in Milwaukee. That's where the Democratic Convention is being held, for their 2020 convention. And the article was raising, well, why Milwaukee? And it gets, now the issue is that when we look at the election, we know the most loyal voting group has been black folks. Right. I think I'm correct in saying that. But what the Democratic Party feels is that what they miss was those white working class people who lost their jobs and their areas of suffering. And those are the areas that Trump was able to get, right? In spite of his policies hurting them, they see their animosity to the other immigrants, aliens, blacks, you know, are so strong that they decided to vote in those areas, in those Midwest areas, for Trump and gave him the electoral vote. So the Democratic Party is going after that, right? Now, we've heard here on Time for Awakening how when the election from 16, that they didn't really, especially in the South, the Democratic Party didn't put any money to get more of the black vote out, because they were catering to white suburban, educated voters. So here now, the loyal base of the Democratic Party being the loyal, largest ethnic bloc of the Democratic Party being Black folks, it seems that if this is true, they're still chasing another group to get them to come out compared to cultivating their natural base. And we have now, what, there's two Black candidates, and I say we, but I don't really think they represent me, but I'm a part of the affinity group. But they got two Black candidates in the run. And to your point, do you hear them coming out that the Democratic Party needs to do more within the cultivating its natural base than it has had than it did in 2016? I haven't heard it yet. But somebody in the strategy of the Democratic Party is positioning themselves by having the 2020 convention, and based off of this article, is saying the Democratic selection represents more than a focus on Milwaukee or even the entire state of Wisconsin. With its 10 electoral college votes, they are clearly eyeing the possibility of taking back similar industrial blue wall states that cost them the presidency.
Yeah, well.
Go
ahead.
No, it just seems that shouldn't we be aware, be conscious of that, aware of that, as we look at issues that whether we have a Black agenda or we have a individual agenda, an item like reparations, say, for say. Well, if they're going after these blue, they call it blue wall states, do we think that they're going to be interested, those blue wall states are interested in Black reparations? I mean, should we be realistic in our analysis to at least raise the question now as we move towards our issues in relationship to what the Democratic Party is doing? That's the only thing I'm trying to bring up, I think, Elliot.
Yeah, well, I mean, personally, I don't think they're interested in any reparations at all. That's just a political strategy for white folks to try to lure Black, young Black voters, or what they consider millennial Black voters. You know, I just think some of our people have to wake up and realize that that our demand for reparations for what was done to our ancestors has to come, and the parameters of it has to come from us, nobody else. So, you know. Mm. To hope that they soften their position or things of that nature. You know, I understand that, you know, people's strategies to rally Blacks that's supposed to represent you to be behind an issue, because they're supposedly obligated to do that. And you can do all you can to force them into what they're supposed to be doing, or shame them if they don't. But as far as looking for white allies in this fight, I'm not looking for any white allies in this fight for the dignity and fairness and justice that was done to our people. The parameters from that has to come from us. So, I mean.
And that's why, you know, I think you've heard me, you know, beat this, you know, drum, that it's important for us to at least get those Black congressional representatives to put their name on that H.R. 40 bill.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
At least do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
If we don't, that raises a question, you know.
You got to put them out there. And it's got to be more of a crescendo of people keeping a scorecard, so to speak, and realizing that these people don't represent you. Similar to what Brother Cam mentioned last week about Clyburn never supported reparations. since he's been in there, and he's been in there 30 years. I mean, so what have you been supporting? What is he? You know, people got to hold these people to the feet to the fire. And if his constituents is that ignorant, and when I say ignorant, I'm not talking about stupid ignorant, ignorant to the issues, then they need to educate themselves or be around people that can educate them or help them to understand what's going on.
And that's, you know, and those people who, at least with this issue and this agenda, as the brother from Black Vote Matters had informed us, that they need to be in their community organizing their people, or as you say, educating their people around the issue that really relates, and making sure that those individuals who are not supporting like this kind of issue that definitely affects us specifically, you know, that and it is a remedy that we definitely need, that they're organizing them, and organize them from a distance. Because obviously, if Claiborne been in there 30 years, the people in South Carolina who's been putting them in there, in his district, they've been the same old people. So it need to be new people on the ground organizing them to let them know. Now, if they've been doing it, as we say, out of ignorance, that this is not a person and that represents us. And here is an issue that shows that, clear as day. If you was hoping and wishing and, you know, waiting for him to do better, this here shows that this is something specifically for us. And he ain't gonna, he don't have to do no more than just put his name on the bill, and he's not doing that. And he's not the only one.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Oh, boy. We take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You can get involved, too, on this Freestyle Friday by dialing 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. When we come back, Richard, I want to throw out there this suggestion that came from one of the black elected officials here in Philadelphia. It's strikingly similar to some of the things that we had discussed on Time for Awakening. But we'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
Preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard. People. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wine. Your day of leading our people is over, and it will never come back to you again.
We're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party, still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
You're the one who put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years. And all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and got it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last. Because you're a chump. A political chump.
So you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise. Any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here, you love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect.
When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America, that's in the Bible, for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating her citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening in this 8:52 Friday evening here in the city of Philadelphia. We're in freestyle Friday mode. You can give us a call. The phones are open. 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Richard, you remember when we would have conversations in the past in reference to violence in our communities and solutions to stop it or to curtail it or to start making inroads in eliminating it. Education is always key, and especially cultural education, because a lot of this stuff going on, self-hatred is almost at the root of it. But we talked about the Black elected officials and ways, being that they're in leadership positions in these communities, ways that they could come up with using critical thinking to put a dent in this scourge of violence. And if you look at what we had discussed before with the employ in white areas, town watches, things of that nature, that use public funds, and I know they do. I'm no politician. You know, for reflective jackets, walkie-talkies, hats, things of that nature. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The animal that killed Trayvon Martin, he was a safety officer, town watcher, whatever, walking around, supposedly policing his community. And they're out there. I mean, if any black person don't believe it, just pick any white neighborhood in your city or town or white suburban area and go walking around. You know, look like you're lost. Just walk aimlessly and watch. Before you get 5 minutes into your walk, you'll be stopped by a policeman asking, do you need help? Some of them might just come right out and ask you, what are you doing? But, you know, it's a part of a town watch. It's people employed to do this. Now, check this out, Richard. All the while, you look at Philadelphia, and I'll use that as an example. And we use Philly as an example several times because before this new mayoral election, just about every so-called power position in Philadelphia was manned by a black person, and council is predominantly black. But in areas of North Philly, West Philly, South Philly, violence is out of control. And to me, if you have one death in the community, it's out of control. I want you to check this out because it was, I just read it in, I talked about it a couple of days ago when I mentioned it to you, but it was in the Philly Tribune a couple of days ago. New breed of, it says, traffic cop to hit Philadelphia streets. City Council President Darrell Clark proposed a new class of civilian cops focused on quality of life enforcement and traffic. Now, to me, that seems to be a gray area, the quality of life enforcement. The reality is we have 351 homicides in Philadelphia. The number that we haven't seen in more than a decade, says Clark, on Monday at a hearing in City Council, Committee of Law and Government. We need to focus our police department on crime and the things that they have been trained for. The proposal to put unarmed public safety enforcement officers on the streets, first introduced in September, advanced with an approval out of committee on Monday's hearing with a final clearing it for a final council vote. The first announcement of part of the new strategy, the proposed officers would be dispatched to Center City, University City, Manayunk, and other spots. Now, Let me say wait a minute first, Richard. See, this is what I'm talking. You know, some of our people is our own worst enemies. We already know we have an enemy, but some of our people is our own worst enemies. Let's go slow with this, Richard. Now hold it. And I'm reading from a published report. It says here, The first announced as a proposed new strategy. Now, wait a minute. You have blacks still in power positions in Philadelphia. In fact, the black political setup is envied by other parts of this country because blacks is in these power positions. Now, this proposed new strategy, what is it? Have you heard about it, Richard?
No.
Have your council people had any meetings to tell you what this proposed new strategy is? This guy Clark is a councilman here in Philadelphia, and he's the president of council. He got a proposed new strategy. The people in the neighborhoods don't know nothing about this proposed new strategy. And until I told you the other day, you didn't even know about these officers, these public safety officers that's going to hit the streets. Now, Richard, this clown, Clark, is black. He realizes, just like I do, that violence has been off the hook in our communities because they patrol, white cops patrol white communities. They contain black communities. Now, you're going to dispatch public safety officers that, according to this report, will have, and let me read it again, shoot, I done lost my space in this here. Oh, it says the proposed officers would first be dispatched to Center City, University City, Manayunk, and other spots. Police Commissioner Richard Ross spoke in support of the proposal on Monday.
He would.
Exactly, he would. But wait a minute. Whoa. Center City? Manayunk?
University City?
University City? What are you... What crime is off the hook in those areas? You know what they're going to do. But Richard, you know what that is. Those so-called enforcement officers that's going to be looking for quality of life enforcement. That's no, what the hell is that? You know, as soon as they see black people in those areas after a certain hour, they're going to phone the police. It's to keep you out of those areas. Center City, University City, Manayunk, those are all white areas and white areas of high salary and high so-called stature. What the hell do you need quality of life enforcement in those areas for?
Center City.
And Richard, those are not volunteer jobs. Those are paid jobs. If you have a poverty rate of 28%, which is the highest of any major city in the U.S. with over 1 million in population, how are you giving jobs and putting them in areas where they're not needed? Those people, that's going to be a paid job. What's the salary that that job is calling for, Richard? I don't see no report on what the salary is going to be called. How much are people going to get paid? You know there ain't going to be many blacks getting those jobs.
Mm.
They don't want you in those areas, let alone so-called patrolling those areas. To call somebody on the carpet for what they may or may not be doing. You the quality of life enforcement.
But you know, Elliot, it's a switch going on here.
Oh, I know. Come on.
I haven't because you know I traverse those areas. A lot, at least Center City and University City, and not Manayunk, but you know, as you say, the population. But you know, for Center City and University City, they do have now they've given it a name because I call them green suits, right? Both of them have people who are unarmed patrol. Because of the college in Center City, I mean the college in University City, and they're there throughout the night. They got them on bikes, they got them walking, especially around Penn, University of Penn. But when we talk about University City, you're talking about University of Penn Hospital. I mean they have colonized a large part of West Philadelphia, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the business district association was paying those salaries. You hear me?
Yeah. Center well, City. Listen, this here, if business district is not going to be paying this, this is the city.
That's the point. The transfer. This now the business district can get out of the business of supplying this patrol safety and put it on the city. But they're using the homicide rate
as an excuse
in the black community.
Yeah, but listen, if you watch the television, they show on there that every homicide in Philadelphia is in a black area. If that's the case, then why are these so-called enforcement officers put in white areas?
Mm-hmm.
See, that's what I'm, these people, Richard, I'm telling you, if I could put a tire and put some flaming liquid in it and put it around one of them's neck, I might do it. I mean, I shouldn't say that type of stuff over the air, but these people make you sick. Let me read a couple of these quotes here. Randy Lobazio, sound like Italian, policy manager for the Bicycle Coalition of Greater Philadelphia, said civilian officers would have a positive impact on safety and could help enforce illegal parking.
They got the PPA, as we call them.
Well, yeah, they already got people for that.
And they like patrol like boot soldiers.
Now, but wait a minute here. Under the resolution reviewed on Monday, Brian Abernathy, city's managing director, will determine the details of officers' deployment and duties. So right now, this quality of life enforcement, which is a gray area, and he's going to determine their deployment and duties, but there's already determined that they're going to be deployed in Center City, University City, Manion. These black elected officials here in Philadelphia, this is their solution or some type of way that they can deal with crime. You let these people characterize your people as some type of... I remember the last mayor that we had, that nutter, that stupid-ass black mayor that we had, used to get in and make all kind of old disparaging statements about black youth in on public television and let them put out a stereotype that the black youth is off the hook and they little killers running around. So this is your solution to it, to employ unarmed officers. And I listen, I don't see nothing wrong with that, because you can employ the Nation of Islam, concerned black people in the communities. You can give them jobs and have them patrolling the communities. Believe me, that'll give a certain amount of respect to get these communities under control. When some of these young people that are off the hook might see their uncles, aunts, mothers, or fathers patrolling their communities. That might get back to putting some civility in some of these blocks in the city that's off the hook, because it ain't all the community. Unlike what they try to this lie they try to perpetrate on television. But that's his solution. Unarmed officers, similar to what we had talked about before, that they already have in white communities and had for years, he wants to bring it to the city, but put them in white areas and put the uniforms on white people. Because believe me, Richard, they ain't going to have no blacks patrolling these white areas. They're not going to do that. That's his solution. Well, put that in your scorecards, the Philadelphia residents that's listening to Time for Awakening, because when this comes up before council, you can ask your council members, why wasn't you told about this? That the city's going to have this paid position of ununiformed officers patrolling communities. Why wasn't you informed? What's going to be their duties? Why aren't they deployed in your areas instead of deployed in Center City, in Manayunk, and University City? This is something that you can hold these people's feet to the fire, because all of them is coming up for re-election here this year. You mentioned about one of the young men, Richard, had asked you about something. What can they do? This is something they can do. Ask them about this. If they come outside and see that it's not safe for their grandmother or mother, father to walk the street in some of these neighborhoods, why aren't these ununiformed people that could be community residents employed to help police the communities?
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw that out there, because you said that you hadn't heard about that or familiar with it.
And like I said, you know, to me, I'm looking at the bait and switch in relationship to, you know, I mean, this whole, the way it's constructed, and I've already said it, but I know for a fact that they already have those kind of patrollers in those areas, at least two of the three areas. And it's interesting about Manioc because we understand the past mayor, Nutter, his start of his campaign for his first election, the support that he got was came from people in Manioc. You know, that's why he had no kind of allegiance to the Black community and said the things that he said because of that support. But so to see them as a part of this mix makes sense to me when talking about it. But definitely to see that the Center City and the University City Business District, the business association, because the business association collects money from the businesses in the area. And that money pays for certain things. And one of those things was these safety patrol people that they had. Right. So now it just seems like, you know, first glance, based off of you just telling me, what they're saying is they done got it to where they done lobbied. I'm making all this up. I have no facts other than what you just presented. These Black city council persons. And they are now going to say, instead of coming out of our dues to pay for these street, safety officers, let the city pay for it. And then the Black elected officials, the council people, to say, well, the reason why we need this is because of the high homicide rate within the Black community, with the high homicide rate, which is not even happening in those areas.
Well, I'm telling you, wow. The struggle continues. That's all I can say, man. This is crazy.
This is again why we need, you know, and you mentioned, you know, the brother from who's the state representative and the leadership of One in a Million in Philadelphia, you know, asking the question of how it can influence, the election and us talking about it. And I passed even your suggestion on, and it was, they laid out the goals and whatever, but the bottom line is that we have to get more organizers. You know, I mean, Kwame Ture was, so correct. It's about organizing, organizing, organizing. But, I mean, those are slogans, but compared to developing organizers around our political interests. And what, you know, when you mentioned when we mentioned Fannie Lou Hamer, and we mentioned what happened, in the 60s around the whole freedom, it was at the Independent Freedom Party. This gets into Democratic Freedom Party. This gets into the political education, the involvement of organizers in a community to be able to access and develop power, to put the right kind of people in place, the right kind of people in the governmental machinery that brings back the kind of resources. Less than that, we're being bamboozled. We're being taken. We can do all the talking we want, but if we don't create the relationships in our community, you know, and the relationship with those individuals in those households, in those neighborhoods, in those blocks, you know, we're going to get the same old thing. And to see that the business district and districts are, you know, just like the wealthy corporate interests are getting what they want. And the only reason why we have high homicide is because we have high poverty.
Exactly.
And we have high poverty because 30 years ago, 40 years ago, they did not put the resources within the community when they seen that the transformation of a manufacturer economy was going on. They didn't put the resources within the community of Black people, who at that point was 60% of the voting population.
and 60% or more of the general population of Black of Philadelphia. They didn't put those resources to be able to cultivate the kind of skill development with all this, because right now they'll say Philadelphia is one of the major exporters. But what is it exporting? Human capital. They didn't put no money in the Black community to develop the educational system. Matter of fact, they took the money out. They didn't put the health social services. Yeah, we were poor. They took it out. Why they took it out? To prepare for what we're labeling now the gentrification process. And what did they put the money in? The prison system. Because they said, I mean, I keep hearing it's more money that goes for servicing a prisoner than it goes for educating a child. That comes out of the state, the political machinery. When I go down that road, you know, you're talking about necklaces. I'm like infuriated because we know that. And the first Black mayor, he said it on this platform of Time for Awakening media under it was brother. Which to call his program?
Jihad. I can't think of Jihad.
Yeah, because he put out another a book, Black Vote Matters, or something like that. That the black elected officials didn't one thing criticism. They didn't go about creating the kind of public policy because they were so interested in maintaining their turfs, creating graph. I'm not using the right word, whatever you call it, but for their own self-interest, taking what could have went to bartering, beating to get in the treasury, the city treasury, even though the state was at war with this city, the resources in order to cultivate the next generation. They didn't do that. They left the streets, they left the people to themselves, and then at the national level, they cut welfare. They created three strike policies, and they filled the prisons. Of a whole generation for 20, 30 years, while they now. We see our communities being quote unquote gentrified. The school I went to, the high school I went to, they closed it down. It was a vocational school, closed it down, and a private person bought the building. Now they got a bar. We had an open basketball on the roof, caged in. They got a bar up there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is the transformation. This is the neglect. And as you said, always said, this is why Black political representatives on their watch. And then you got more of this here, this shenanigans of patrol public safety officers and in areas that already got public safety officers.
Yep. Well, hopefully some of our people can start making these people answer for this foolishness, because it's absolute foolishness. And they're doing this right in front of your face. Like listen, I didn't know it until I read this. You didn't know it at all. The majority of our people don't know this is going on, Richard. This is the problem. This is the problem that we're facing. We already know we got an enemy, but now you got an enemy that look like you, and it's a double battle. You got to be prepared.
And this is what in these platforms, people, especially on this moment, say Time for Waking Freestyle Friday, where people can do
just like what you did, Elliot. They can call in their cities, in their counties, in their, from their state, and let each of us know that the condition and the strategies that are being used by individuals like that are happening all over. Look at Detroit.
Richard, let me read this article because, and then I'm go to the phones. There's a couple calls waiting. This article was, it really struck my interest. It was out of the Miami Herald. And this is from a couple of weeks ago, in fact. And it's entitled Miami Gap on Race and Wealth. It's out of the Miami Herald. Now, I want you to check this out. And I'm going to read some of it because I'm not going to read it all. I'm going to kind of skip through the article. It says, a new study sheds light on a yawning gap in wealth in the Miami area between white households and households of color. And see, I want to focus in on this, what they consider households of color, because some of our people have the tendency to buy into that narrative that you got American blacks and these other blacks is somehow your enemy that come from other areas, when it plays right into the narrative of white hegemony and white domination and quote unquote white supremacy. Now, look at this, Richard. I'm going to continue reading. Among non-white groups in the Miami area, households identifying as black that continue to suffer most, according to the author of the study, The Color of Wealth in Miami. Now, they use Miami for a test case, sort of, because of the what they consider the racial mix of the area. Mm-hmm. The wealth gap exists across racial backgrounds: African American, Haitian American, and all other types of black households, the study says. If skin complexion is a marker of social treatment, as I believe it is, then we will still have lots of structural barriers related to someone's phenotype, says the study's co-author, Derek Hamilton, a professor of economics and social policy at Ohio State University. The study is a part of a series chronicling the racial wealth gap in major U.S. metropolitan areas. Previous studies that looked at the gap in Boston, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C. area, among other cities, Hamilton says the black-white wealth gap is most severe in Boston. So why is Miami so unique? Thanks to this particular mix of ethnicities identifying as black, the authors are able to show how skin complexion is most correlated with economic insecurity. Now, Derek Hamilton said that Miami was unique because you have a lot of what they consider ethnicities there that are black and that they identify as black. Right?
Right.
And it's like that in other cities to a certain degree. But let's look in inside the numbers, so to speak. Now, I'm going to continue on. Using the new survey study as well as the U.S. Census Bureau's data covering a period between 2013 and 2015, the study's authors calculated the median net worth for households of various ethnicities in Miami metropolitan area, comprising the Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. For white households, the median net worth was an estimated $107,000. For black American households, the median net worth was $3,700. For black Caribbean households, the median net worth was $12,000. Meanwhile, households identifying as Cuban had a median net worth of $22,000. And it has U.S. black descendants and black Caribbean descendants, primarily Haitians, Jamaicans, Trinidadians, Tobagoans, and blacks with Latin or Hispanic heritage, are more economically similar than Latins of various ancestral origin who self-identify as white as opposed to black, the author writes. Hamilton's data shows that the experience of being black in Miami is uniquely a difficult one, even accounting for different ethnic or ancestral origins. Indeed, the education appears to do little to close the wealth gap among Miami's household of different ethnicities. For a white household with a bachelor's degree, the median net worth is $300,000. For a Hispanic household with a bachelor's degree that identifies as white, the median net worth is $87,500. For black households with a bachelor's degree or higher, the median net worth is $32,000. The author's findings suggested Hispanics seem to grasp an inherent advantage of identifying as white. So we see here that in this system of what they consider white supremacy, it doesn't matter if you're Jamaican. According to Derek Hamilton now, which I agree, it doesn't matter here whether you're Jamaican, Haitian, Trinidadian, Tobagoan, you're still going to suffer because you're black. When it says that the median net income down in Miami for the average household is $3,700 if you're black, and if you're black Caribbean, it's $12,000. Richard, what's the real difference?
Mm-hmm.
Both of that is poverty. It's poverty. So what am I supposed to do? Fight against the guy because he's Jamaican or he's Haitian and I don't like him? We both living in poverty based off a system of white supremacy that was set up so both of us will fight against one another. Am I supposed to feed into that narrative? You ask me. You tell me, Richard.
No.
Or should we be looking at the guy who put us both in that situation and find out ways that we can work together against a common enemy?
Mm.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong, Richard.
No, I agree with you.
Maybe I'm wrong. You got the average white household without a degree is $107,000, and with a degree is $300,000. You got white Latinos that want to identify as white, according to Derek Hamilton. Their household degree with a degree is $87,000. And a black household, and according to Derek Hamilton, black, whether you're Jamaican, African-American, Haitian, or whatever, your household degree, your median degree with household median income with the degree is $32,000. What's the difference? Our people need to stop buying into this foolishness and fighting in the communities and all. You know, this level of ignorance need to stop among all of our people.
Mm.
Let's grab a couple calls and see if you want to get involved in the conversation. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, good brothers. Good evening.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, good brothers, you know. I think what is probably developing, you know, I think what is developing with this EDOS movement and NAACP and CORE, I think that it's probably a move to co-opt, you know, other voices, because that's what I hear developing. That's what I kind of see the groundswell is developing too. The conversation, people talking about reparations and, oh yes, and the NAACP should administer it and this and that. So maybe that's what's developing, you know, you know, to counteract Pan-Africanism, you know, because we know that prior to this, ADOS, it was Pan-Africanism that was at the forefront. But all of a sudden, this thing come up and, you know, take away. But, you know, I think that as Pan-Africanists, we should endorse what ADOS do and continue to do our work, you know, instead of picking a fight. Hey, endorse what they do. Yes, your platform, fine. Go ahead with your platform. We support it, brothers and sisters. But keep focus on what we are doing, because we know that Pan-Africanism is the key. Now, I want to turn a little bit about Venezuela, what's going on in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know that Venezuela now has the largest oil reserves in the world. And we know that America is going for that oil. So I want to see, though, how these countries, like my country that I'm from, Jamaica, who take money from China, how is that going to play, you know, in this move now in America, who has embargoes against China and Russia? How is this going to play into, you know, countries like myself, you know, and, you know, where I'm from? How is that going to, and if Brother Richard could give his analysis on that, and what he foresee happening, because now these embassies have withdrawn, they closed their office, because even yesterday, or, you know, Jamaica, they closed their office in Venezuela. So they cut diplomatic ties. So it looked like definitely something is getting hot, you know. So if somebody could give me a little analysis on that, I would definitely appreciate it. And thank you very much for this program.
Well, we do see.
Thank you, Brother Morgan.
We do see the last ditches of the capitalist, what's that, oil reserve, oil barons, right? They're consolidating. This is the most, what they call that, what's that word, egregious hostile takeovers. So they're calling all their stops right now, because the question of energy transfer, I mean, you know, the next 10 years, oil is not necessarily going to be the major driver of the industrial infrastructure of the Western world or of the white world, right? And Trump and company, they're just trying to get all they can. And it seems that they're, you know, like what we are seeing is all the countries, the political, like Elliot, when you talk about the black political entrepreneurs in Philadelphia and how they're, I mean, the example you just gave, if we're correct, you know, not only, you know, supplying jobs on the ground, but transferring the resources from private interests to public interests for private interest purposes. And again, transferring where the people who were paying for the business people are now going back to the government to have the government pay for their thing. Well, this is at the geopolitical level, it seems to be the same thing. I didn't know, Brother Marcus, that Jamaica is put, but we know that the political elite, even in Jamaica, has a relationship to the Western interests, American Western interests. So it seems to fall in line that they would, just like Brazil, just like Colombia, would kowtow to the gangsters, the business gangsters, the oil gangsters of the American business interests. What does it say? You know, it says that, for me, is that they know that these, even at the multinational level, that they're desperate. Because the economies are changing, the Western economies are changing.
and they're going to get all they can before the transfer. What? Let's say they change, totally change the amount of oil that will be used to drive the industrial energy output will drop in the next 15 years because of the alternative energy usage. That means their revenues is going to drop. And they, and places like Saudi Arabia. Now, the South America, Venezuela is one of the main countries that was trying to hold on. But they're doing it, you know, you said, Elliot, right in front of our eyes. They're doing a hostile takeover right in front of our eyes and trying to use law. They can't even use, when questions ask, is it legitimate what you're doing? They can't even answer it.
Well, Richard, let me say something, because I don't think it's all about necessarily oil. It's not like the oil was just discovered in Venezuela or it just come about. Venezuela has had oil, I mean, as long as America has been developing oil. Oil has been there and has been a primary source of revenue for that particular country. You still with me, Richard?
Yeah.
It has been a major source of revenue for that particular country. I think that also as a factor in it might have something to do with some of the things that Brother Obi Igbona Jr., who is the U.S. correspondent to the Herald, expressed on this program about 3 weeks ago in reference to his links with young people in Venezuela, links to Pan-Africanism in Venezuela, and some of the educators that have been going back and forth with him and others here in the States. Richard, do you remember the conversation that we had with Brother Obi in reference to that? Yeah.
Yes, and yes, I do, and I agree on that. But that's why, I mean, the resource still for those, the multinational, the oil, energy interests, you know, because what Brother Obi, you know, expressed was why they had control and what they were doing with that, because Cuba was sending doctors and whatever, the oil interests, the oil barons, they're also fighting within themselves. When you're talking about the energy feud.
Oh, no. I'm not saying that that's not real. I'm saying that I don't believe that's all of it.
Yes.
That's not the total picture.
I agree.
Yeah, because I think there's other factors involved, and some of the things that Obi Igbona Jr. mentioned on the program, I was totally unaware of.
Right.
And especially the strong links that they had with not only Pan-Africanism, but with Zimbabwe and other countries that had established some form of independence. So I think a lot of that that stuff, period, is dangerous to white hegemony. Any type of alliance with other black countries is dangerous. They'll do all they can to smash it. And it's been obvious. It's a historical fact that they will do all they can to smash alliances between black countries.
But you have to say also, and Venezuela is a good example of the resistance, or the last of the whole on resistance, because I use the Bangdang Conference at 55, right? But by 73, the white Western world, the economic world, what they have been doing besides killing off all the leaders who were just doing what you're saying, right? Consolidating, creating relationships with each other in order to create what they call that new international economic order. But since 73, the white economic elite has been trying to get back control, and that's where it is. I mean, looking at the continent and looking at the Caribbean, the leadership that they have put, the white Western economic interests have put the leadership in place to support.
Oh, certainly. Yes. Them. Yes, I agree. You know what I mean?
And South America was the only place where the leadership was still maintaining that drive of, because South America was one of the places where they those countries in South America, and I think the last one, the brother in Ecuador, are the last that were looking at supporting the people and then trying to take the resources back and put it under the control of the people and the wealth to develop it in their own interests instead of the white Western economic interests. But the pushback is to change the leadership. And this is the most vulgar moment, because before they would create coups to destabilize countries and support the ones who were really not in the interest of the people, the leaders. And you see that that's what's going on the continent. Now, this is like, we're just going to stick somebody in there.
Yeah, and the guy that they quote unquote want to stick in there, we can see that he came out of the U.S. Right. factory of leadership,
right? That was created.
Yeah,
before when we say the CIA, this, you know, these people that were put in place, the CIA did it. I mean, it was always like covert black budget. This stuff here, I mean, it's straight up to where they're fighting the State Department, of oil man who was Trump's head of the State Department. He didn't even put people in place in the State Department after Obama left. Now, Obama wasn't good, but these guys, and this is the guy from the big oil conglomerate, Tillerson, where he come from. He hasn't put anybody in there. The State Department is supposedly understaffed. And they're building up the military. Look at the budget Trump just put in place.
Yeah,
at the expense of social services. So that's, you know, so the Caribbean leadership has already been in alignment. So all they gotta do is, and you see what they threaten them. If y'all don't do what we say, I mean, they threatening their own kind. They threaten the EU. If you don't do what Jay said, if you don't build up your military, we ain't giving nothing. And they're all shocked. Germany's shocked. Europe's shocked. France is shocked. Like, where you come from? I don't know. That's how I say it. And we on the ground, the Pan Africa. That's why I agree with is we have to reconsolidate and re-energize. We have no time to be in no feud with another historical group within the black experience, because there are black people, and a large part of them, in my estimation, who are loyal Western European believers.
Repeat that.
Loyal Western European believers.
Okay.
When we say we fought in the Revolutionary War, we fought in the War 1812, we fought in the War, the Civil War, those people, they see themselves as American. And they don't have no problem with American foreign policy. This is black people I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Got no argument there. Let's go to Newport News. Let's go to Newport News. Newport
What's
News?
Up, gentlemen? Are you there?
Yes.
How you gentlemen doing today?
Great. Good. Sound like you're on a hands-free.
Oh, I'm trying to quiet it now. Hold on. Actually, I was trying to speak off the computer. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was listening to a lot that y'all are saying. I think I'm a reserved comment because I'm going to tell you, you're wrong about a lot of information. And when I say wrong about it, this idea that keeps perpetrating, talking about ADOS is Russian, ADOS is anti-immigrant and all of that, it's just misinformation. As a matter of fact, I'll just share with you offline and stick some stuff in to show you.
Well, let me ask you something, Brother Otis. Did you hear any of us say?
Let me finish it. I'm gonna tell you why. I don't want to argue in public. So what I'm gonna say to you?
Oh, I'm not arguing. I'm just asking you a question. Did you hear any of us say that ADOS was Russian bots or whatever?
I didn't say you said it. I said the information is wrong. It's just wrong.
Oh, because I heard a program where they said the Time for Awakening said this, and in reference to me. So I just want to make sure that I'm not.
I don't know what program said you said it. That's not what I said.
No, I'm not saying that you said it. I'm saying I heard a program say that.
Mr. Elliott, this goes back to my point. There's a whole lot of information out there that is wrong. Now, okay. I'm going to say this to you. I actually had an exchange with Cam Howard on your program. And he told me what he didn't say, but I went back and listened to the broadcast. So what I said he said is exactly what he said. Now, my other point is, he put out a public statement that was filled with the same inaccuracies that I said he made over a month ago. So I'm going to say it again. There's a lot of things that are being said that are inaccurate about that movement specifically, but I'm going to say this to you. One thing I do know is after 3 years of working with them, it really doesn't matter what mud is being slung. John McWhorter just came out with an interview. He was on NPR, and I was going to cite it. What he actually was on was Sandy Darity. Sandy Darity, most of you already know who he is. Over 20 years worth of work laying out how reparations can work. So it really doesn't matter how many people think it won't work or shouldn't work. The point is pretty much what you say on this program all the time. The people that are doing the work know exactly where they're going. And naysayers are part of that journey. And when you keep hearing people talk about, even that report you just talked about in Miami, actually, we've been following that for about 4 or 5 years because it is a report that is going to go over every major city. And it actually started out in Boston. So we got about 3 years worth of work on that that maybe some other people don't understand. And it's not about pitting blacks against blacks. What it is doing is showing that the data says if you have immigrants that come here that are not from a poverty class in their nation, they tend to mix into communities, appear lumped together as people of color, but their life experience is not the same. Now, if you want to just keep saying individual acts of discrimination make them the same, that's okay. But the facts say, if you look at one industry alone, let's just talk about news and media. If you pick up your phone tomorrow and you call and you want to be on Joy Reid's show or on Lawrence, what's his name, Run His Mouth on MSNBC show, if you want to be on any one of those programs, they have in places that take care of logging and guests and what subject matter, they have black faces. Those black faces are not ADOS. Those black faces actually keep black publishers and writers out of the national limelight. It's a fact, and the work to support what I've said has been going on for about 4 years. So I'm going to say it again. I don't like to argue with people in public about something that we actually can discuss. I can give you information. You can look at it, and maybe you can change your own mind. But to keep saying there's a kumbaya in this country that stops American descendants of slaves from concentrating on reparations for those very descendants is really not going to stop the groundswell that has taken 3 years to build to this point. And when I hear people like Nkobra,
what's the Mr. Thompson claim
that the reason is that the national limelight is because what they've done, they're just not being honest, because we know who did the work, and I'm going to leave it there.
Well, before you go, what I want to engage in is the question of that I keep raising. I just want to, you know, because of the perspective that you're saying, doesn't it require that reparations being done by the political organizing on the ground? I mean, I don't know if that's a statement of fact or opinion, but that's where I don't care about the air talk or even the numbers. Because it seems that it's a political machinery that we have to engage whoever gets the motivation. And that political machinery has to be done by organizing effort on the ground. So am I incorrect from your vantage point in that making that statement?
Well, you're correct in a point. But my point to you is part of the reason for ADOS is because the people who have been leading it have been playing the political gamesmanship rather than forcing the issue.
That's what I want to do because I didn't understand.
I'm trying to make it plain to you.
Do me a favor, brother Otis. Hold on a second. Do me a favor. I'll go to a next call. Get on a landline for me because it sounds like you're talking with out of a paper bag. I want to have your voice clear. Okay. I'll come back to you. Let's go to 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, my brother?
How are you, sir?
Fine. Hey, Brother Richard. How you doing?
All right now.
Praise be to Allah. Glad your brother's doing well. The gentleman that Brother Otis was referenced on MSNBC is Lawrence, the Caucasian for Lawrence O'Donnell. That's who he was talking about, Lawrence O'Donnell. Anyway, I don't know where to begin. My brother's got me spinning, my head spinning. First, before I talk about Venezuela and Israel and everything, let me say this about Brother Richard. In the first few minutes of the show, you mentioned former Attorney General Kathleen Kane.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, she's serving 9 to 10 to 23 months in jail. And I said this on terrestrial radio for the longest. She was targeted. I'm not saying Kathy Kane is Harriet Tubman. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying this was a Caucasian lady that was trying to be somewhat fair because she saw the race. Because she said clearly when they came up with all this stuff on Vanessa Lowry Brown and all the rest of the black Louise Williams Bishop, she said Tom Corbett and his Republican cronies, they didn't target not one white official, whether it was Democrat or Republican. They just target all the black officials. And like you said, Rich, they were stupid for taking that money, even going for it, because common sense would tell you, if somebody come in your office, sometimes some things is nonsense and common sense. If somebody come in your office, Brother Richard or Brother Elliot, you don't know from a can of paint, and they offer you $500 to do a favor for them or a gift, a alarm should go off in your head. That way, maybe I'm being set up here. I mean, it's just common sense. But obviously, they was asleep at the wheel at the time, and it cost them their careers and stuff like that. But the point I'm saying is that Kathleen Kane saw through this, and she refused that it was racism. And none of the stuff with the Winnie Fred wasn't for that house Negro, Seth Williams, who's serving 5 years in jail for corruption itself, that twisted irony, that is. This Negro pushed it. He went over the white woman's head and pushed it for these black people to go to jail for this little petty stuff that they was accused of doing. So he pushed for this. But I knew right then that Kathleen Kane was targeted by this, that. Ironically, this is why I keep trying to tell our people how these Caucasians, how these devils stick together. Kathleen Kane was targeted. And listen to me carefully, Elliot and Richard, because this is no lie. She was targeted by that same element that got Bill Cosby in jail, the Kevin Stills, the Lisa Furmans, the Judge Wendy Kirklands, all of them, the Steve. These were the ones that targeted Kathleen Kane, and they said she lied about leaking grand jury information. Now, you know, if that was the criteria, Scooter Libby, Dick Cheney's former chief of all them devils would be in jail right there. They did that and a whole lot worse. You had and stuff. They leaked stuff that did and stuff. They none was in jail. If Kathleen Kane was one of those white women like Len Abraham here in Philadelphia that went after black people wholesale with these draconian sentences. You know, and remember Len Abraham was referred to by the New York Times as the deadliest DA. She went for the death penalty more than any DA in the country. And that's saying a whole lot when you look at the number of DAs in this country. And most of the people she went for the death penalty was people of color, mainly black people. If Kathleen Kane was one of them kind of people and stuff, they could give a damn whether she leaked anything. But if she was locking black people wholesale, but because she was trying to be somewhat fair, she was targeted, and that's why she's in jail right now. And I guess, like I said, she was targeted by that same ilk, that corrupt ilk. That's what Camille Cosby was saying when she was saying about this Judge O'Neill, who was the presiding judge over Brother Bill's case. Stephen O'Neill, Kevin Steele, Lisa Furman, Wendy Kirkland, all them crackers up there in Montgomery County, they racist bigots to the max. They corrupt, they racist, they got no integrity or nothing. And this is what Camille Cosby was talking about. That's what them, the same group individuals, is why Kathleen Kane is sitting up in jail right now. But anyway, let me say this on Israel. I don't know if you and Richard was aware, Brother Elliot, you got this fiasco coming up next week. You got the thug murdering scumbag coming to the United States next week, Netanyahu, the thug. He's going to meet with Trump because, you know, the annual Israel ass-kissing is going to take part next week called AIPAC, which I'm sure y'all gentlemen are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
It's taking place next week. And we already know how this dog and pony show going to go. You, Elliot and Richard, I hope y'all brothers, if you ever see an individual's lips go from pink or whatever natural color somebody's lips, I'm talking about black folks now, the male and female, you're going to be shocked. Well, maybe not shocked. That's maybe the wrong word. It will, like Ali said, will shock and amaze you when you see the number of Negroes' lips go from being pink to brown, because they're going to kiss so much Israeli ass next week in AIPAC. They're going to be there chanting and shouting for Netanyahu and them thugs from AIPAC and stuff, just like the white political people are, whether on the Republican or Democrat side. You have all the bunch of Negroes, and I bet you, Elliot and Richard, one of the ones that be there chanting for Netanyahu and them thugs and stuff would be our esteemed congressman, who happen to be the same hue as us, if you know what I'm talking about.
Now, brother, I seen quickly and glanced at a report that says that a lot of the Democratic elected officials aren't going to the AIPAC.
Well, I hope not. The ones I hope that don't go are black, because I hope they show some backbone for a change, because that's one of the things I was going to get to tonight. And again, I'm not putting them on no pedestal, but some of our black elected officials just recently did show some backbone, not in a sense, not in the way I necessarily would write, but it was the first step in the right direction. But again, you're going to still see a group of Negroes at AIPAC, and I guarantee you our esteemed congressman, Richard, is going to be there. But when it comes on terrestrial radio every Saturday, he'll be up there kissing the Jewish butt or Israeli butt, the Zionist butt next week. But yeah, when the Republican devils came up with that resolution, and they wanted specifically to condemn our dear sister from Minnesota, our dear beautiful Muslim sister, Ilhan Omar. They wanted to specifically condemn her and use her name. Well, yes, we had a fruit black. They didn't name who they was, but I kind of got there who the ones that showed some backbone. They argued behind closed doors with Nancy Pelosi. This all can be fact-checked, and said, no, we don't just want no condemnation. It's not going to be naming her, singling her out for anti-Semitism. If you're going to have a resolution, you're going to condemn all forms of discrimination, anti-Semitism, Islamic phobia, homophobic, everything. So they made them change the land. That's why the Republicans were so upset. That's why the final vote was 100-something to 23. We had 23 Republicans voted against it. And you had some Republicans did vote for it, but you had 23 Republicans voted against it. That was the difference in the vote. But it was sweeping. It was broad sweeping, where it condemned all forms of discrimination, which we get the white conservatives upset about. And with the black Democrats from the Congressional Black Caucus finally showed some backbone and said, no, we're not going to let you just single out Omar and put her name up like she's some kind of racist, some kind of wild racist, condemn all forms of discrimination and stuff. So they did show some backbone in that sense. So your point, Brother Richard, about that some Democrats not going to AIPAC, I hope that does come to fruition, because they need to start standing up. Because one thing, and this is why we can't miss this, like in the final card that just came out, people can say what they want to say about Sister Omar raising that and challenging AIPAC and stuff like that. Oh, the genie's out the bottle. It's not going back. They have forced even some other white people to even question that. Now, believe it or not, Ellie Mitchell, you got some white Republicans, and they're a bunch of devils and stuff, but you got some that don't agree with Israel and stuff like that on their positions, but they've been kowtowed like a lot of other people. Because, for example, Minister Farrakhan even said that he had white conservative Republicans. See, that's what I say. That's why you see how deep this Israeli thing is. Minister Farrakhan, see, he had some white Republican conservatives came to him at a speech he made and said, Minister Farrakhan, we agree with you about Israel. We agree with you, but, you know, we cannot say that publicly. You know, we get scorched by our white evangelical supporters. These were white Republicans came to the minister and said they agree with him on Israel and how wrong they are and stuff like that. So you got people out there that know what time it is about. Well, Omar raising that issue, Sister Ilhan Omar, the genie is out the bottle. It's not going to be put back. It's going to be continued discussions about, and hopefully it's not going to happen overnight, Ellen Richard, but hopefully step by step, piece by piece, you'll get more elected officials, especially hopefully black ones, and even some right white, you know, right thinking white ones. I don't hold my breath a lot on that, but hopefully some of them will start standing up against Israel and stuff, because this Moaz, you can't criticize Israel, you can't condemn them for their mistreatment of Palestinian people, their support of the apartheid regime for Africa, you can't criticize them for the fear of being called anti-Semitic. Well, this nonsense has got to stop. And by the way, and I say this, a couple of things I'm off. By the way, Ellie and Richie, you got another one. I don't know if y'all heard. She's been targeted by the AIPAC or the ADL or whatever. Angela Davis, and I've had issues with Sister Angela in some cases, but she had the courage to speak out against Israelis' occupation and mistreatment of our Palestinian brothers and sisters. So she's been vilified. As a matter of fact, to show you the power that these people have, Ellie and Richie, she was scheduled to get the Fred Shuttleworth Award. You know, he was the great black civil rights leader that was part of Dr. King's inner circle. Brother Fred, who passed away, Mr. Shuttleworth passed away a few years ago. Well, anyway, she was scheduled to get the award. The Jews put so much pressure on the people. That's why I say these devils, they got to be put in check. They put so much pressure, they rescinded the award. So Angela Davis was supposed to get this award, Legacy Award. She won't get it now because the designers was upset down in Birmingham, because, you know, she's a native of Birmingham, Alabama. They were so upset they made them rescind the award. I mean, man, this is some deep stuff, man, because she dared to say that the Israel, somebody need to check Israel on their treatment of the Palestinian people. So clearly their unchecked power, this thing where they could say what they want, do what they want, nobody's supposed to hold them accountable, this got to stop. And I think by Sister Omar raising that, the cat's out, the genie's out the bottle, it's going to be discussed now, especially among young black people now. Like the minister said in that clip y'all made, they tired of your compromising talk. These brothers and sisters not going for that stuff. They not going to kowtow to Israel. That's why I say we got a blessing in that Congress now, and it's up to us to work it for what we are. Because, yes, Sister Cortez from the Puerto Rican sister, she came out the other day and supported her and said that the attacks on her was unfair, because I didn't know this had just happened recently. On the House floor, a Republican GOP senator told Ocasio, go back to Puerto Rico. That's right. But you had no comment, you had nothing about it in the major media. See, that's what I say. Some stuff going on behind these doors with these bigots. They say all kind of racist, vile stuff, whether it's against black people, Muslims, Latinos, whatever. We know where they're coming from. But again, they're allowed to get away with this stuff. But God forbid you say something against Israel, especially when they legitimately have to be criticized, you label an anti-Semite. You're a hate monger. So this nonsense has got to stop. And as far as Adele Clark concerned, Ellie, you mentioned this Negro earlier. Ellie, how many times have I told you and Richard and the Time from the Wicked listening audience, Adele Clark is part of that group. I keep on telling y'all, as long as we as black people, like you said, Ellie, we have got to get politically educated. And like you said, that's the problem with so many of our people, they are politically ignorant. This is why a Negro like Adele Clark continue to get reelected. We have a chance in May to get this Negro out of office. I think he's going to lose? I don't know, because I don't know the sophistication of our people, because these Negroes see what they hope is a low turnout. See, a low turnout favors somebody like Dale Clark, because you know his cronies going to vote for him. But if you can get a large segment of the black community to come out and stuff, and I know he has a one or two opponents he's running against in the primary, but the key is to get the vote out. If you get the black vote out in full force, he can be defeated. But if there's a low turnout, he's going to be reelected, because all we're going to vote for him is just his crony. That's why people like Dale Clark, Kenyatta Johnson, they like low voter turnouts in these primaries, because that's pretty much is assuring for them to stay in office. But the more people come out, it's the chance they could lose. And like you said, Darrell Clark is a disgraceful Negro and stuff, man. That for him to do this stuff is a complete insult when he see his community around him going to hell. You had just had a brother got shot in a bar right up here on Wayne Avenue and he and stuff. But brothers, just, you know, I'm not a bar supporter, but the brother's just doing his job. This silly Negro coming there, you know, shoot the brother because he was upset because the brother didn't open the door fast enough or whatever. Some fool is
yeah,
like
he was
that.
A mentally challenged gentleman.
Oh, that's what he was mentally challenged. Whatever.
The guy that they had in the guy that they had, you know, doing the cleanup. He had been there for a number of years. Everybody knew him and loved him.
The guy that got killed. Oh,
yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I ain't talking about the guy. Well, the guy that did it is clearly mentally challenged. But no, the guy that that he killed was a mentally challenged man that had worked in the bar for like 15 years.
Wow. And see, Ali, that even makes it even more egregious. I didn't know that the brother was, God rest his soul, may Allah be pleased with him and grant him paradise.
Yeah,
that
he called him over there to open the door, and, you know, he wasn't moving fast enough for him. And that
makes it even more of a greed. And that's well, and that proves your point, Brother Ellie, you and Richard. When you get stuff like that going on with these silly Negroes doing stuff like that, and you're going to put some kind of safety officers in Manioc and University City where it's low crime rates, it just go to show you where that Negro's head is at. But again, Ellie, long as we as black people keep voting for people like Darrell Clark on a city level, and people like Kenyatta and Artem, well, Kenyatta's on city too now, but vote for Negroes on the state level, like the Jordan Harris's of the world on the state level, and people like our esteemed congressmen on the federal level, we're going to continue to get what we get and stuff, man, because like, until we start getting young, or not so much young, but progressive candidates in office that's not afraid to challenge the system, the status quo, and speak truth to power, we're going to continue to get these things. Darrell Clark is not – all Darrell Clark is worried about is his bottom line, which is his pension, his paycheck. And matter of fact, not only has he disrespected the black community. You played that clip, Brother Elliott, that Sister Paula got when she got on him in city council. Well, he has also disrespected the black veterans. You don't take my word for it, Ellen Richard. Talk to these black veterans in this city and see how they feel about Darrell Clark. They can't stand him because he has disrespected them as well. I mean, this Negro is no good, but he'll be on terrestrial radio, I think, probably tomorrow, telling his lies and stuff like that, because, again, he's dependent on black people being politically ignorant, and that's why he figured that'd be just enough that he can get back in office and continue to be the slimy, rotten Negro that he is and stuff like that. Man, like you said, they make you sick, these Negroes, man. They constantly disrespect our people, sell our people out, and I close with this, Elliot. It were not for Brother Asa Khalif back here the other year when that cracker shot the brother in the back and stuff, Brother David Jones, it wasn't for Asa and them challenging Darrell Clark and at that news conference where Mayor Kenney was attending. It wasn't for him challenging him, making embarrassing that Negro, putting him on blast. He forced Darrell Clark to speak out against the unjustified shooting of David Jones, because you know and I know, Ellen Richard, that Negro hadn't said anything about the shooting of Darrell Jones or any other black man for that matter. He didn't say anything, Ellen, when that white female cop grabbed the brother's young man genital. Remember that incident, right? Mm. You heard Darrell Clark say anything about that?
No.
Of course not. And he wasn't going to say nothing about David Jones either. Went to Ace to embarrass that Negro, forced him to say something. And all he did was he felt so embarrassed that he had to say something. So he said, so his little weakly timid response, well, we concern any time a person is shot fatally by the police. That was his little weak response. But he wouldn't even have said that had enough for Ace embarrassing that Negro. So my point, Ellie, is like I said, as long as we keep on supporting Negroes like that on the city, state, and federal level, we're going to continue to get what we get. Like I said, you're going to have a group of ass-kissing Negroes at the APEC fiasco next week, kissing Israel Zionist butt next week. It's going to be sickening, man. But for the black Democrats to finally show some backbone and don't go, then I applaud them and stuff. Because like I said, I can be against you 24-7, but you start making some changes and trying to do the right thing, I'll back you, brother. Because like I said, you know, when you make the change to try to, like Michael Jackson, a man in the mirror, and you're trying to do the right thing for our people, I'm willing to work with you, because none of us is perfect. We all sometimes start off late in life. We still go through degrees of consciousness and stuff like that. So some of them Negroes start getting some backbone and some will and stand up against that Israeli lobby, I'll be right there backing them and stuff, sister or brother. So, but again, you got to prove them. I'm from the show me state. You got to show me. You got to show me better than you can tell me. But anyway, Brother Lee, thank you. And Richard, thank you all for your time. Thank you for letting me express myself. And I'll sit back and listen to the rest of the show.
Thank you for your call, brother.
Thanks, Brother Elliott. Thank you, Brother Richard.
Let's go back to Newport News. 757-757.
How you doing, gentlemen? I don't know if I can follow that one.
Hmm.
Hey, look,
one of the things he said about the Shuttleworth thing, this falls back into what I was saying before you said you couldn't hear me. It's hard to take away misinformation, no matter how people find it true. Number one, I also know some ADOS people in Birmingham who actually spearheaded the campaign to go against that those people for trying to take away that invitation. And what ended up happening is the black community planned an alternative event so she could still come to Birmingham, and that pressure, even pressuring some of the black politicians there, end up leading to them re-inviting her and going back on their statement. So that's one part of getting the full truth out. Partially what he said is true because it happened, but the end result was black people in Birmingham pushed back. And I know some of those black people. Now, here's my other point. When you let things go by, like here's a perfect example. Jerry Ball put out 5 or 6 years ago definitive information that this idea of black people having 1. So many trillions of buying power is based on a fallacy. It's based on a Nielsen poll that talks about spending money on necessities, household goods and all of that. If a man is spending his money on absolute necessities, rent, food, and toiletries and that, you don't have buying power. You can talk about all you want, changing your spending habits. That doesn't do away with the necessities you have to have for family. The point I'm trying to make is the idea that those reports, like the one you got out of Miami, that's not based on trying to tear black families apart. What I was trying to say to you is it does speak to the fact that the majority of immigrants of that are black that come to this country do not come from the poor sector. And that is part of what is trying to be changed in immigration status. Because what has happened is the same thing that happened in Venezuela. People from good incomes come here. They get trained in American ways. They go back to their countries, and they are proxies for white supremacy. That's another reason I don't argue with people in public about this idea that because you're putting these specific people down, that you have no camaraderie with the country. For instance, talking to Cam Howard, I heard him spit out numbers about one section of people got 20 million people out of poverty, and the other ones, there was 10 million, and blacks had gotten another 10 million in poverty. The fact is, I told him something that he completely ignored, and I didn't get a chance to come back on rebut it. But it's a falsehood. I told him for a fact, Nigeria has tripled its billionaires in a decade and almost doubled the poverty of the people on the ground. So this idea of cherry-picking facts to fit your narrative is part of the reason that AGOS came about. Because we're sick and tired of people talking about, wait a minute, let me finish.
Well, now, wait a minute, Brother Otis, you've been talking for 10 minutes. Hold, I want to ask you a question.
Wait a minute.
I want to ask you a question.
I just heard the last man talk about Palestine.
Yeah, but I want to ask you a question. I'm going to let you talk. Come on, this is a conversation. Come on, just calm down.
I was only trying to.
Well, I want to ask you a question. I'll let you talk. What is the things that he's cherry picking? What are you talking about?
I just said what he cherry picked. He said 20 million people were lifted out of poverty in a country in Africa. You did the broadcast with him. I came back and said Africa is a continent of 54 individual countries and some territories.
You don't think
Nigeria,
he knows that?
Wait a minute. You asked me the question. I'm trying to tell you. Nigeria alone, one country, has tripled its billionaires and doubled its people in poverty in the same 10 years that he cherry-picked data. That was my point. When you're talking about 54 different countries, you cannot pick no two or three and make them the whole. It doesn't work that way. I also told you about talking to the contingent from Zambia. I listened to their presentation. I heard everything they said about bringing people out of poverty, by the Chinese helping them with the airports, what they're doing. And then when I asked them, how come you have G4S and Core Cities there,
helping you to imprison dissidents, they ask me, why do I want to talk about that?
Who are you talking about? Zambia. Who is that?
Zambia in the nation. I told you about going to that last summer. I called in on one of your shows and talked about it. My point to you is...
Yeah, but I don't even know who you're talking about when you said I asked him. Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about one of the heads of the 10 zones in Zambia that are basically regional presidents. I talked to his contingent when they came here to Newport News, Virginia. And he talked about...
Oh, you said something about on my program. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I did mention it on your program. I mean, yeah. And I told you because you're a Pan-Africanist, so I told you about it.
Well, you don't know what I am. I never told you I was a Pan-Africanist.
No. I'm saying you have Pan-Africanists on here.
Yeah, I have a lot of people on here. You're not a Pan-Africanist. You're on here.
You know what, Mr. Elliott? I'm talking about the topics that you cover. You have Pan-Africanist people on here. You have people from all over. My point to you is because I know you covered that subject, I brought it up on one of your programs. Now, the point I'm still making with Mr. Howard is when I say cherry pick, I said just that, because you have to look at the whole. You can't just say that you've done one thing in one area and not look at the whole continent, because you know how I stand with Africa. I think the whole continent is under attack.
But see, this is the, and I understand your point about cherry picking, and I guess I'm as a Pan-Africanist, I make no bones of that. And I think the analysis that I would have, the historical framework and the analysis, probably take longer than the exchange back and forth.
Basically what I was trying to say, Richard, is too hard to cover.
But the thing that I'm trying to get understanding in relationship to the dialogue and the differences of the dialogue is what it's going to take to reach the goal. And the one in this discussion, all of this comes out in the two ideological camps that have come out of the same history, same experience. There are two ideological, and it's probably three, but they come out of the same experience. The experience of being enslaved in North America and America specifically, as I said. But the goal of reparations being achieved as a political end, it doesn't matter of your ideological perspective. It matters of your organizational capacity. And that's what I'm trying to get clarity on. Is that a true statement?
Hey, Richard, let me answer you this way. I tried to make a point that when you have to knock down the disinformation, that crowds the issue. Now, you want me to speak to a specific point, and I'll say it to you again. If you follow the workings of Sandy Darity from just 2003 until now, and he's done 20 years worth of work, some of those answers are in there. That's why it's disingenuous when people say, you won't even let me finish the response.
Only because you're not addressing my issue, because I'm not...
Because your issue, I am addressing your issue. You want me to be specific about how I'm going to do something, what I'm telling you.
No, it is in
the report. It is, I'm trying to tell you. The answers are in the report. How you go through formulating of reparations. And I tried to make it plain by saying this. Here's a perfect example. Did anybody have any questions about how reparations was going to be done for Jews from 1952 when it started? Nobody had it. And here's what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to answer your question. Because his plan is generational. It's being framed as some paycheck and it's over with. No. It's a generational approach.
That's not what he asked. I'm not asking that. In order to move something through the political process, you have to utilize the political machinery. To utilize the political machinery, you elect individuals through a balloting process. When you elect those individuals, they support a political bill. And right now, the bill or the thing that's on the table is H.R. 40.
Well, you had Cam Howard on that.
Wait a minute. I'm just trying to get
Didn't Mr. Howard explain to you how that works? Yes. And the thing, that's the point. And
he
what
told
he did.
You
it,
right wait, in January.
Wait a minute. The thing that he said, the thing when we bring on people who talk about Black Independent Party said, the thing that we brought on people who talked about Black Vote Matter said, is that on the ground, there is not enough people in those communities organizing the community to the ballot to select the person who would represent that issue. Because right now, Kim Howard said, and we keep asking three times, we asked him as updates, how many of the CBC members have signed on to that bill? His last report was 29. Are there more than, and it wasn't 29 CBC members. Are there more CBC
Richard,
members?
That is what ADUS is about.
Wait a minute, that's the point I'm making. ADUS is about that. And Cobra's about
exactly
that.
That's exactly one of
them. Wait a minute.
I work with one organization, the other I read about.
Everybody is about that, and everybody has a certain amount of people on the ground. But it's still, with that being, well, so ADUS is a new mobilization and movement that is, I assume, the first conference or convention, whatever you want to call it. The convention, I think it's called a conference. It's the first time that they will assemble its people. It already has a plank and platform, agenda. Okay, I got that. But I can't make no assessment until after that, me personally. Because
you're
I
making an assessment
come,
now.
No, I'm not.
I'm
making a general assessment about all
you,
of us.
You have a history and documented recordings on what your assessment is. It's just that plain and simple. We don't have to dance around anything. I'm telling you that the answers are there, and the idea that ADUS, the method they're doing to put political pressure on everybody, including the people who are up running now for the Democratic Party, they're just lucky that because there is a setting, a GOP, that is not having a primary, that they're not on them too. Because the plan was to attack them all.
Well, Brother Otis, let me ask you a question.
Bringing down Democrats.
Let me ask you a question. The objective goal is to obtain justice and reparations for our ancestors and for Black people, right?
Specifically for descendants of slaves in the United States. That
okay, and now I understand that. If that's the objective and goal, and it's other groups that have been doing this work, historical groups that date back to the 19th century when Henry Highland Garnett, Martin Delaney, and them was doing the same type of work, when you have groups out here and you have groups that work together and that have been working together, and Cobra, December 12th movement, MBUF. These groups have a track record for a number of years and have worked together. If you have a group that have come on the scene, ADOS or DOS, whatever, they come on the scene, why is it that the group can't work with the other groups? Now, that's
well,
a question. Let me finish the question.
You asked a question.
Well, I'll tell you.
How long is the question?
I'm asking the question. Maybe if you can't answer it, then I'll answer it for you.
You can give me your opinion, but I'm going to tell you this. I happen to know, just like when I said something to Cam Howard, there has been conversations, not in the public forum, but I can tell you this. When Cam Howard and them are telling me that reparations were in the limelight, here's another one. Cam Howard.
No. Answer my question. Don't go all around the Mulberry Bush, Brother Otis. Just answer my question. Don't go all around the bush, the merry-go-round. Answer the question. Why can't the groups, if it's about our ancestors, and if it's about justice, you have groups out here that has a huge...
I just told you why. Because
no, you didn't.
It is specifically about American descendants of slavery in the U.S. Everybody else wants to focus on a pan-Africanist or wholeness when you cannot, we're not suing in the UN. This is a specific claim about treatment from the U.S. government and its systems of oppression, not about what happened in Haiti, not what happened in Tobago, because those people are also using the very same status.
Okay, so
if it's HR 40.
I was trying to say to you about HR 40. What we're doing about HR 40 is arguing over whether or not Sheila Jackson Lee is the right person to have there because of her history, because of her association with Clyburn. Let me finish what you asked. Because, and Cam Howard talked about this, how it's got to get out of committee and all that. That is the other backdoor stuff we're doing. You don't get to just bring this out of committee and stick it to one or two people like Jeffries that has done nothing for blacks. You got to have the Sandy Darities in the room. You got to have the people who have a documented history of working for ADOS.
Is HR 40 still the bill that everybody should be working to move, whoever moves it?
Howard explained that perfectly when he said, I'm trying to give you an answer because Hank Cam talked about it on your program. He said originally it was there, and in January they went back when Sheila Jackson Lee got it and they revamped it so it's not just a study. So nobody's taken away from the work they're doing. What we're arguing is they trust the system to just put that committee there, and we're saying no. We see is everything from the Monahan to civil rights.
I understand, put people
in the room that aren't for us, and we get
asking specific. See, I'm trying to get the understanding. Is HR 40 with everybody, no matter what their color, what their interest should be trying
to... I just told you, Richard, yes, but how it's framed.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to get to.
How it's framed.
Because right now nobody's pushing it. She just put it there, and
it's people pushing.
Nobody?
Who do you mean?
The reason why I say nobody because 29 people have only signed on the bill, and it has needs more than 29 to get out of committee. So it takes more representatives than what's there now to move it, even no matter whether Sheila Jackson Lee or Conyers, there takes other people. And that means that people in other states and other communities have to push their legislators to at least sign on the bill. Now it doesn't matter.
ADS people are actually calling their congressmen and senators. Right.
That's why I said I'm being reserved because I have to see whether
I'll offer you my ADOS phone number to share some information
whether ADOS is going to be more effective than in Cobra or December 29th, and actually
ADOS is doing the part of trying to force the issue.
Let me say this. I look at our experience here in a historical perspective. All of our people here have been in a struggle against European hegemony and this system of white supremacy. I don't look at this, and this is just me. I don't look at this as ADOS and Cobra is better than the next group. These other groups, keep this in mind, Brother Otis, and I know that you're an intelligent man. Well, let me finish what I'm saying. I didn't say that to you. Don't be disrespectful. That's the problem with some. Hold on a second. That's the part of the problem of some of those people that you're talking about. When they use all this stuff about these alphabet groups and they did this and that and they want to sit with Sharpton, that's disrespectful. I want you to understand that. Now, let me finish what I'm saying. You don't hear other groups out here talking about, well, and Cobra did all the work, this and that. December 12th, you didn't do nothing. MBUF, you didn't do nothing, because it's not about the groups. It's supposed to be about our ancestors. So when you get a group that pops up and some of the so-called leaders of the groups are disparaging people that been out here working before they could piss straight or before they was even born, it's disrespectful. and it's not cultural. That's more of a European ethos than an African ethos. Oh, I forgot. Some of them people don't consider themselves African. Maybe that's why they do that type of European type of stuff. Now, maybe some of the groups, some of the people on the ground, because Cam said he works with people on the ground. It's from ADOS. He don't have any complaints. But being that you're in contact with some of the leadership, some of that disrespectful talk is unnecessary. Take it from a person. I don't get on here and disparage the sister. The sister done been on this program, even though she said some disrespectful stuff that I heard out of her own mouth in reference to this program. But I don't feed into that foolishness because it's foolish. All I'm saying to you, if you're on the ground with them, if you talk with them, tell them. All that type of rhetoric is unnecessary. If it's about our ancestors, keep it that way. If they want to deal with alphabet groups, then buy some soup and they can count all the alphabets in the soup. It's no need for disparaging, disrespectful remarks like that. It's about our ancestors. It's not about her, this guy she's with, or nobody else. And I don't, and I'm not yelling at you. I'm yelling at this whole thing is stupid. Keep this focus on our ancestors. That's where it belongs. The focus is on our ancestors and the blood of our ancestors that's on the ground in this country. That's where the focus should be on. I don't give a damn about followers and you don't have a Twitter account and all that. That's bullshit.
Well, you know what? It seems like you heard what she said, but you're not listening to what I said.
I heard what she said, and I heard what she said in reference to Time for Awakening. And you heard it too. See, I don't give a damn about. I don't give a damn about no damn Twitter followers or none of that damn bullshit. I'm out here doing this work because our people need information. The fuck, I don't give a damn about no goddamn followers. And I hope she hear it. Fuck the followers. She ought to learn some damn respect.
So I'm done with it. With her and not ADOS?
That's her problem. That's her problem. I don't have no problem with no ADOS. I think it's good that young people that haven't been involved or know anything about reparations are getting involved. That's good. But that incendiary rhetoric that comes from some of the leadership is totally unnecessary. And they didn't just go somewhere and sit down and learn something. I heard some old dumb crap about, oh, I just found out that our people wasn't kidnapped. I heard some old foolishness talking about, oh, I just found out our people wasn't kidnapped. You heard those comments.
I know you heard those comments.
Those people need to sit down and get educated and then come out here and then they can roll up their sleeves and do the work. Because they sound stupid with some of these remarks.
Do you want me to have a rebuttal?
Brother Otis, you know it ain't necessary for a rebuttal because you know some of those incendiary remarks is unnecessary. Don't defend that.
My point is, I said no defense. I'm saying to you, there's a lot of things I've heard that I don't like, but I'm taking those up with her personally. But what I'm saying to you is, again, ADOS is not about saying no working with other people in the diaspora. Now,
don't keep saying ADOS. I just put the onus on the leadership. I ain't talking about ADOS.
I'm saying to you. You're saying you have a problem with them. That's something.
No, that's not what I said. Man, come on. Don't put words in my mouth. I said I got a problem with the incendiary words coming out of their mouth.
Exactly. I'm not putting words in your mouth, Mr. Elliott. I'm saying exactly what you said. You have a problem with the way the leadership voices their expressions.
Oh,
but you
okay.
don't have a problem with the fact that ADOS is working for reparations.
No, I don't.
My point. No, okay. Now. Here's my other thing. You say what Incopra has done. I extended a hand to Mr. Howard, and I still do because the same people I've been working with, he's probably worked with them longer, but I know them. My point to you is still the same. When I hear, and I was trying to make this point, when I hear people like Cam and John McWhorter say reparations was more on the scene from 1990 to 2003, and then finally Tiny Hudson Coast brought it back up in 2014. I said it on air before that. Reparations was a discussion in where? Academia and a few of those supposed to be intelligentsia. The difference between ADOS is these people have spent 3 years trying to educate the grassroots.
Wait a minute. Hold it. Stop. You said said reparations was on the Voice of Academia. When? When?
They said in 2009 and 2000. I didn't say it.
Who said that?
John McWhorter said it.
Oh, I ain't worried about no damn John McWhorter. This reparations talk been a grassroots talk for centuries.
No, sir. They said it was in the limelight in the American media in 2000.
Well, that's John McWhorter, whoever that is. I don't know who he is.
Cam said it on your program, sir. It was in the media at a higher rate than it is now. He just said that on your program. I didn't say it.
Okay.
He said it.
All right.
That's all I'm saying. And I'm saying to you, yeah. As a matter of fact, Ray Winbush said the same thing in a tweet. My point to you is it was being discussed, as I said, and we've often said, in the halls of academia. It's no longer just in the halls of academia is my point. It's you're talking, people on the ground are talking. When I go out, I'm up here at Virginia State University right now. When I go out, there are people talking about it, pushing their local congressmen, want to know where they stand on it. So I don't shout down the fact that it's in the limelight. I just keep saying, you got to unlearn some of the stuff that's not true. I'm not trying to even argue with you. I'm saying you got to shoot down the negative. That's all I'm saying.
I think, as you said, some things is recorded that I have said, because I know for Philadelphia specifically, which I'm not a part of academia, that me and the first generation, I'll call that, of Encobra, we did have a national conference here in Philadelphia because of our organizing effort in the 90s, late 90s. Those of us who assembled were not a part of academia. Now, that's in the 90s. I did leave the leadership, but the organization, the organization continued and is still continuing to today. So, it's not about it's the historical thing, and that's what I hear Brother Elliot saying. We have a long historical, what they call it, timeline in every community in relationship to this, and one of the chairs was also, I'm calling him a mentor, Brother Obadeli. Since he's a Philadelphian, I actually studied under him and, members are of the Republic of New Africa. So for me to hear this, that's why I'm kind of coming from the perspective I'm trying to come from in relationship to how I'm watching this new mobilization, organization around this effort. So, and I have the opportunity just to be here and have that experience. But I'm just putting that out in the sense of when it was in academia and when those of us who weren't a part of academia who actually assembled in Philadelphia. And from, as I think I've reported,
can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Did that help do what Cam and McWhorter had told me, that it pushed reparations to the national limelight, and that was much more exposed in the late 90s and the early 2000s than today?
Yeah.
Go back and listen to his film, and you.
Well, yeah, I mean,
followed it. They had,
and that's what I hear everybody is trying to say to each other when we get past it, that it, as in any organizing effort over centuries, our freedom didn't just come, and there's people generations that came ago, and I see it's another generation.
Doing what you accused me of. I asked you, can you show me any definitive proof that reparations was in the hotline? I asked you why, because I started research to try to find out when it was being covered by major TV, when the articles were out, any conferences I knew, and I don't believe it.
I'll refer you to this, and I think he did the best on that recently and today, matter of fact,
who is that?
Brother Comrade Worrell, on Brother OC's program. He gave a historical. He also written a historical.
Wait a minute. I didn't ask you about historical. I asked you, when was it in the limelight?
That's what I mean. I'm what I'm saying.
And on the lips of presidential nominees or in the newspaper or in the media.
That's what I'm saying.
Show me it wasn't. It wasn't. I didn't ask you when you had conferences. Come on, Richard.
No. I didn't say that. I said, Brother Worrell can be able to.
I listened to part of that, not the whole thing, because I had to go and listen to a thing on Virginia State.
What I'm saying is that he gave, and to that question that you're asking, he gave a more definitive and more experienced answer to
when
say.
When the press covered reparations.
Right, yes.
And it was in a national discussion.
Yes. And that's why I'm giving you a reference.
You got my information. Please send me a link. I'll devour it tonight before I go to sleep. Once again, I still consider you gentlemen comrades. And in the
always
end, keeping reparations to the forefront and what Sandy Darity had said. He had a discussion with McWhorter, and he tried to tell McWhorter the same thing. Us having repeat discussions in the history is not really the argument. The argument now is basically what this younger generation is saying, either we're on the platform and the discussion on how to take care of this nation's sin, or nobody gets to count on our votes for the Democrats or any damn thing else. This country must change, and it's only going to change with pressure. If you don't like the people being, quote, disrespected, tell them to stop trying to believe that giving it to Sheila Jackson Lee without pressuring her is going to somehow get more people on there. No, because you know what? There are people right now trying to plan on how to get rid of Clyburn when he comes around in 2020. Nobody gets to sit and say, we're going to do what we've been doing. That is the whole reason behind ADUS. It must change, and it must change now.
All right. Thank you for your call, brother. Let's go to... I guess we got about 15 more. Go ahead, Richard. Would you want to say something before we go?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Let's go to 646. 646.
You know, man, you just wasted a whole scenario.
Wait a minute. Your voice is cracking. Your voice is cracking. Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
I hear you now.
I'm just saying, you just wasted 45 minutes to a half an hour of fantasy shit. He's talking about people coming together and putting pressure on Negroes, scores every day of the week. Do you think they're going to be able to put together any type of damn coalition to stop with Sheila Jackson Lee or Harbaugh? They can't even get their local...
You got a bad connection, man. Your phone is bit. You got to try to reach us back on another phone.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, but you're going in and out, and it's a terrible connection.
Can you hear me? Is this better?
Yeah, this is it's not.
It's even worse.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Richard. Well, yeah, I hopefully that you know, I kind of made it clear to brother.
Can you hear me, Elliot?
I hear you now.
Yo, Elliot, this is just bullshit, man. They not organized. They have no serious plan.
Well, wait a minute. When you say they, what they?
I'm talking about the Yvette Cornell. I'm talking about the Antonio Moore. If you read that ADOS 101 page, and you looking at the other work that has been done by, you know, in Cobra, December 12th, and that, you're not going to be able to get nothing done unless they all collectively come together and work together. They don't have no type of constituency other than a bunch of clowns on Twitter talking shit, writing bullshit, arguing with people who basically have more position and power in this country and have more dumbasses listening to them than these clowns do. You know what I mean?
Well,
I have
Jay,
no
let
issues.
Me say
let
this.
Me finish. I have no issue with Otis. I dig Otis. Otis is cool with me. So whenever he puts something forward, I know he's trying to do the best he can to move the group forward. But those in leadership have no clear idea nor no clear vision on how they're going to deal or address or present anything.
But,
this is bullshit.
But that don't mean, I mean, because I look at general, more general than that. And I'm not living in hope. Because when we talk about social movement, it has its periods, right? So I'm you know, and that's why I keep pushing for us to, we have to wait until the first conference, and we have to raise the question, which the point that you're making, or you're making two points in my mind. Well, will there need more than just their organization, their mobilization, organizational effort in order to move this this reparation bill or reparation issue forward? If they do, then they will have to create a coalition with others who are working in that direction. If they don't, they will have to be able to at the local level organize to where they could be able to move the political machinery.
You have to educate the people.
People, right.
You got to educate the people. They're not educating the people.
Right, but wait a minute. They just got to this point. So, no, they're not there yet.
Stop, Richard. I mean, because you're wrong is... No, let me tell you where you're wrong. Because they're trying to present that they have already done the work, that they have already done the organizing, that they have people in place to do what has to be done. They're not in every major city. They're not in these streets. They're not nowhere but on Twitter. So when you make that type of analogy, you're wrong, brother. You're dead wrong. What you must first do is organize the people in the streets. Once you put that into place, then you can move forward to start this BS on Twitter and things of that nature. You don't have chapters in no city set up to bring the people to you. You understand what I'm saying? To move it forward. This is all bullshit.
Well, Jay, go ahead, Richard.
You have
to organize. You can't. This is something that you're trying to say that you want to have influence over individuals who are shaping the policy of the country. How are you going to attack someone through Twitter when you don't have nothing in place in the person's district? Come on, man. We got to grow the hell up. We got to realize when we're being played. It ain't about the Democratic Party. It ain't about the Republican Party. It ain't about none of that. It's about organizing, putting together a plan of attack where you have people on the ground that could address these individuals that you're asking to make substance change. You can't do that through Twitter. You got to be able, just like when the person starts a campaign to run for office, what do? They bring together committees. They identify who they're going to target, and they grow and they develop. You understand? If anything, they should be trying to do with the Baba Louie chick, AOC or whatever her name is, did by getting rid of the guy that she got rid of. That's how you build something organic and move it forward. Then you have to be able to do that with leadership. You have to be able to do that with committees. You have to be able to do that with workers. They ain't got that. A nigga on Twitter ain't gonna do nothing for me. You gotta go into these streets.
But they don't have it now. That don't mean that they may not get that.
Bro,
that's the point I'm making.
But Jay, and listen,
you're causing too many enemies. You're causing too many problems to do it now.
But Jay, listen, it's not. And like I was talking with Brother Otis, I don't have a problem with the people. And I'm talking about it's people out here. Cam mentioned last week on the program that he's been working with people in Chicago that consider themselves ADOS. It's not the people. I don't have a problem with the people because it's young people now. The age of the two leaders, the two self-professed leaders, the age is people out there in their age bracket and younger that's all of a sudden waking up to reparations that didn't seem to know anything about it before. That's good. The thing that's disparaging and bad as far as I'm concerned is the incendiary comments coming out of the quote-unquote leadership.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking
yes.
about. See, I don't want to say, oh, this, that, you know, because you're talking about other people, and it's other people out here that's hard workers and want to help. I'm talking about
the lack of organization.
Well, I don't know about
Elliot.
All I'm saying is this.
No.
The leadership is making comments that are totally unnecessary and out
yes.
of bounds. And it's putting, in my opinion, it's putting a bad mark or a smudge on the group they're trying to form.
And you know something? That's the issue. There should never be no visible fighting whatsoever between any group.
Well, you know who that helps. But you know who that helps.
Of course. That's
who?
What I'm saying.
Who? No, I want you to say it.
Nowhere?
No. Don't say they ain't going nowhere. You know who that helps. Richard, tell them who it
Elliot.
Is.
Yes. Elliot and Richard, you know what they can do?
At the same time, that is not no historical something new. What we are experiencing right now, we can track our history back and find that kind of same back and forth within us. So
yeah,
this ain't
what
new.
What you're missing, Richard, is why at this date and age, 2019, COINTEL, all other type of things that we have gone through as a people, why are we getting caught up in nonsense that we were getting caught up in the 60s and
because,
the 70s? Why are we still playing this game and we're supposed
we
to know better?
Because we haven't been able to have what you say all the time and which Elliot say all the time. Through the black leadership that we have not been able to maintain control and provide the historical understanding to those, as Elliot said, this is another generation.
So how could you be a leader if you have no historical analysis? Wait a minute.
I came in, I didn't have no historical analysis until
the point is you can't go at the top of leadership if you have no historical analysis and you are able to articulate the ins and the outs of any situation. Come on, man.
You can.
No, you can't, brother. Not on this level. On building the group, maybe, but not when you're dealing with reparations. Not when you now at the point to where as you're trying to divide other cultures within it, now when you're pitting so-called indigenous Africans, Jamaicans, and this and that, which to me is craziness.
It may be, but that don't mean that at some point, and that's why I'm saying, I keep emphasizing, I'm waiting to, with all this going on, I'm waiting until October. Because I hear growth from when I first started listening to the language, and I also recognize they're using a medium that didn't exist 30 years ago. Twitter didn't exist. Facebook didn't exist. YouTube didn't exist.
Richard, listen, bro. I don't know if you on Twitter or not. Are you on Twitter?
No.
Okay, well, bro, let me tell you something. Get on Twitter before you make that analogy, because what they're doing on Twitter to me, it don't make no sense to me. What I'm trying to say to you, Richard, is sometimes you gotta, like Elliot has said before, sometimes you gotta just close your mouth, do the work, and organize and put together a plan. This is the time, based on what they've done over these last couple of months, they need to fall back, say nothing, put together a plan for October, let it do what it do, and then move forward. What they should be doing is, I would have people like Otis and some of the others
being the point people to push forward the propaganda. If I was Cornell and Antonio, I would close my mouth. I would start meeting with other reparation individuals, try to figure out how we could put forward a consensus. I would show up to the NCOBRA meeting in June to talk with the people. You understand what I'm saying? And see how I could get them to come to my meeting in October. I would build. If I was Tone and I was Yvette, I would not say nothing else. Because, see, I've watched this. I know how this is going to play out. And, you know, anytime you got your enemy trying to capitulate to you, ain't nothing good going to happen. Because, like all things that have been done towards black people is, once these politicians get what they want for you, they tell you to kiss their ass. And if you're not in a position to punish them, then you see what happened. You get a Barack Obama who sick Negroes today still love. But they'll never put into analysis what this man really is and what he's really done.
But at the same time,
are the perfect example.
At the same time, those who make observation about the Pan-Africanist community, as yourself has done also, or what they call so-called conscious or whatever, we have not been able to marshal in our own best interest because we have had independent schools on our agenda for how long? We have had economic independence on our agenda for how long? We have had...
And you know why the biggest problem is?
The issue isn't that. I mean, the point is that we have a challenge, not that we know, as Francis said, that we identify the problem. Is that we haven't, as Francis and Amos have said, we haven't come to the point of problem resolution. So when we resolve the problem, because we can continue in these forums. And these mediums, especially these new digital mediums, we can continue to identify the problem. That's not an issue.
Yeah, but you have to have, you know what you have to have, Richard? And it's right there now for education in regards of independence, is the new book by Baba Baruti. The new book by Baba Baruti, I think it's called To Teach Your People.
Right, right.
Is a total outline on how we should go about educating African children.
The thing
from
is...
Let me finish, please. Please. From A to Z, if we use that as the blueprint, that could be the basis to be able to use it as an example for our community as the guide to putting ourselves in a position to do all of these things that we made a mistake before, do it right. Because it's outlined the positive, the negative, the mistakes that we've made, how we could correct the mistakes, all of those things. And all of these movements, we've never had that type of groundwork. It's like the Bible. It's just like, you know, we need as a people, because of our mental sickness, we need a guide, a Bible, to guide us into doing certain things. The reason why the conscious community hasn't been able to do certain things is because we haven't come together in the way that we should as Africans.
Okay.
If you come together as an African people in the right way, you could do anything. Until we come together as an African people, we'll always be divided. We'll always get caught up in these situations. Okay. Just like this reparation thing is. This reparation thing has a lot of promise. But the way that it's going about and the way that it's being done, brother, let me tell you something. By the time the election is over next year, this thing will be a wrap. I guarantee you, you think there's going to be pressure put on these candidates between now and the election regarding reparation? No. Because the thing is, once the media shuts it down, it's going to be a wrap. Because, see, you don't know this, but I've been observing it. They've been kicking people off of Twitter with this ADOS. because the Negroes like Mark Thompson and Joy Reid and them came out with that crazy word, bot. So now, here it is, they're going to use that to get rid of these people. You see, this is a strategic game that's played. This is why Negroes like Joy Reid and the minister and the rest of them are enemies. Because I guarantee you, they're going to get rid of people off of Twitter because of this reparation thing. Now, let me ask you this, and I'll leave it like this. What happens to the reparation movement if Yvette Cornell and Antonio Moore is kicked off of Twitter tomorrow? You tell me
what do you
what
mean
happens.
What happens to it?
Tell me what happens. The work still goes on.
Let's do even better.
What do you think happened to ADOS?
What do you mean? What do I think?
Reparations will continue.
Yeah.
What do you think will happen to ADOS if them two are kicked off of Twitter?
Oh, it might go away tomorrow.
Okay. Well, I said it might. The white man is in the position to get rid of them whenever they want to.
Now, wait a minute. Hold it. I just want to be clear. I said it might go away tomorrow. But if you have sincere people that are really involved, then they'll join other groups and keep pushing because it's supposed to be.
Or
they'll come up with ways in order to do. I mean, Twitter is just another tool. I mean, if they're sincere and their mobilization and their support there, they'll come up with another way.
We don't operate like that, brother. I mean, why do you think we're in the condition we're in? Because
I mean,
once the white man, no, Richard, I understand what you're saying. But the reality is, we don't operate like that. Once the criminal picks one of us off, it shuts down.
No, reparations is not going to shut down.
You name me a movement that's going in the direction of this whole reparation thing that's divided the way that it is, that once the cracker picked people off, that it didn't save.
But the point
of the matter is, I want people to be responsible in this situation and move forward with reparations. But I also want us to be clear that the only way that reparations is going to move forward is if we work together collectively. You see what I'm saying? We're not working together collectively now. And the thing is that the white man has the power and the position and the authority to shut it down whenever he wants to, because we don't control nothing.
Well,
and this is all I'm saying. I want reparations. Let me be clear. I want reparations to move forward. But we have to be intelligent. We have to be strategic. And we have to be clear of what we're dealing with in order for reparations to move forward. Because I tell you this, if we get rid of ADOS tomorrow, what you think is going to happen within COBRA? What do you think is going to happen with the other groups? Do you think that they're going to allow these people from ADOS to come into their movement and there not be any type of bickering and things of that nature? Come on, man. Study our history. Our history shows it. There were so many brothers from the Panthers and from these other organizations that tried to join groups after the other group was dismantled, and it didn't happen. That's why we're in the position we're in, because we don't understand how to put certain things aside and work together for the common goal of what the interest is. There's too many brothers that was in the Panthers. There's too many brothers that was in us. There were too many brothers that was in the Black Liberation Army that once those groups abandoned, they was left out in the cold and in jail, brother. I studied my history. I know what happened to these brothers. I know brothers that never got involved in another group after this. And I'm telling you that if we do not take care of this, the same thing that happened to those brothers is going to happen with this whole reparations movement. And that's history.
But you know,
that's history.
I mean, that's I have to say, and I respectfully say, and not that I disagree with that, but that is your opinion, because obviously reparations is still going on. It's been going on for centuries, as Elliot said. Different generations. The issue is still an issue that's central to African people here. This moment in time is just one moment in time. And what we're, and it may be, as you say, looking at the symptom of a bigger problem, because you also said, even within those of us who call ourselves Pan-Africanists, we have the same challenge before ADOS, before anything else. We have the same challenge, because if we didn't, we would have those things. We would have been able to upscale Baba Baruti's educational program, or the brother Klein in Chicago, or all those other educational institutions that are doing it at a small scale. We would have been able to upscale them, scale them up, you know, if it wasn't something going, and that ain't got nothing to do with ADOS or people. That ain't got nothing to do with the white man. That got something to do with us. We would have been able to do that, and we haven't at this point. And we've had other historical moments when that has been done. So it's other things that we have to address. So no, reparations won't go away, because that's
interesting. This is the time to, whereas within, I would say, the last 10 years, or maybe even earlier, that reparations has been in this type of spotlight. And believe me when I tell you, the way that it's going now, it'll be out of the spotlight soon, and we'll be in the same position. Because the thing that kills me the most is that when you even talk about this whole H.R. 40 thing, or H.R. 20, or whatever the H.R. is right now, my mind is a little fogged on it. Who controls it? Who wrote it? Has anybody ever read it thoroughly? You understand? Has it ever been really vetted? Is it what's best for the people?
Wait a minute. Who wrote what?
Who wrote the H.R. 40? The Congress, I think it was
Congress. Well, you heard one of the brothers that wrote it was on last week.
Oh, he was one of the brothers who wrote it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, he's one of the people that wrote it.
Yes.
All right. So let's say it gets to a certain position. Do you honestly think that the Senate and the Congress is going to pass it? Don't you honestly think that all they're really doing is capitulating?
Isn't that a reflection of our organizational ability? Isn't that a reflection, though? What you're stating, it still goes back to reflection of what we haven't been able to do. And what we haven't been able to do is what you stated, because all the challenges we have, whether we be bickering with each other, whether we are not working in coalition with each other, them not passing it, because we don't really need them to pass it.
No.
To deal with reparations. We don't need them.
And what I'm saying is, what have we put in place or even thought about doing with the fact of the matter is they may never pass it? What do we have in place to put enough pressure to whereas if they don't pass it, we get something? What do we have in place as far as ideas to change up and maybe come at it another way? What type of real serious platform do we have ready to deal with it? And this is why I'm constantly saying we got to all come together collectively. What do we do if the white man say, okay, we're going to give your Negroes $25,000 in reparations? Is that acceptable? Do the leadership now say, okay, we'll accept that as reparations? And what happens if we say, no, we're not going to accept that for reparations? Is there any defiant statement on what we will accept and what we expect? No.
I disagree with you, because you've mentioned Brother Baruti. He has an operational system, educational system. That's one. That don't have nothing to do with whether reparations are passed. Scaling it up has nothing to do with reparations are passed.
That's not reparations that Baruti has.
Yes, it is.
Reparations.
Reparations is about, and again, if people, I would direct people to listen to Brother Otis' program this morning and listen to Elder Comrade Well. You know what I mean? Because there's an internal reparations and there's an external. Most people, we're talking about the external, in dealing with the government. But most of the time, when we're talking with each other, we're talking that we need internal healing based off of the Maafa. That nobody can do that for us. And again, when you say, well, who are doing that? Well, you bring Brother Baruti or those.
Come on, man. In the minds of everyday people, they're looking at dollar signs, man. You can't even get Negroes to come together to build a community. You had Olio on the radio Wednesday talking about how niggas won't even come and participate in Israel's business. You think Negroes understand with reparations? Here it is, they going to have people who don't even respect them enough to not wear masks, cut their ears. And you, come on, man. I can't believe you talking this. Negroes don't even have a plan for reparations.
Well, yes, they do.
You're going to give them $25,000? You think that's reparations? The people that are sending us reparations ain't even coming up with a concrete plan.
Jay,
craziness.
Jay, they do have a plan for reparations.
Who?
I'd say that again.
Who?
The groups that have been working, the groups that have been working at this, MBUF, who Comrade Well was on today, and COBRA, the December 12th movement, members of the Nation of Islam, that sent a coalition.
Man. Now you bringing up Louis? Oh God!
Wait a minute, Jay. Hold it. See, you mess up your own thing when you deal with these personalities and disparage people's names. It's people that are involved. Do you realize that in Durban in 2001 that it was members of Nation of Islam there?
I know people that were there.
Okay, then what are you talking about?
I know these guys for over 30 years.
Okay, well, why would you disparage them?
Huh?
Why would you disparage them or their work?
I'm not disparaging them.
Why did you mention Louis? Why did you mention that when I mentioned the Nation of Islam?
Why did I mention Farrakhan? Because of the simple fact he's a divisive individual.
Did that have anything to do with what I was talking about?
Let me clear it up before you jump on me. He's a leader, but when he's part of the mix, he causes too much problems.
Elliot, the thing is, Jay, for me, the position that you take is kind of fluid. On one hand, when you showed where people are actually doing the work in spite of any outside, then you move to the people who are not. When what you do is bounce back and forth compared to recognize.
Nah, bro. Let me tell you this. I'll clarify for you.
That's what I
hear. When I'm talking about people coming together, I'm talking about NCOBRA. I'm talking about DOS. I'm talking about the other groups. Once they come together, once they get their stuff in order, then you bring in somebody like Farrakhan. But if you bring Farrakhan at the beginning to sit at the table before you got your act together, you got too many problems coming with it.
What do you mean? Wait, Jay, hold it.
I'm just trying to be honest.
I guess about 4 minutes.
Let me just ask you this one question. Do you think any representative in the United States Congress or the United States Senate will sit down with Louis Farrakhan?
I don't know who they'll sit down with.
Come on, I don't care. Stop, Elliot. You know, and I know, the APAC and the rest of them would cause holy hell, and you know black people ain't in no position to stop APAC from doing whatever they want to do to black folks. Cynthia McKinney, and there's no other black politician that has been able to hold off the ABL. You can't name me one politician.
But that's your personal challenge, is that...
The
personal challenge is that you're saying, in the end, in the beginning and end, as far as I hear you, Jay, that black people can't do nothing.
Not at all. What I'm saying is black people need to come together and deal with the reality and understand who the enemy is. Black people need to come together as ADOS and COBRA and the other groups, sit down at the table, put together a plan that all can agree upon, and then move forward. At that point in time, if they didn't want to bring in individuals who the broader society have a problem with, and they understand what is going to happen if they do this, then they have the right to make that choice. But get to the point to where, as you have things in place, to be able to start a fight, and then if you decide you want to bring somebody in, then you do it. Because if you bring them in from the beginning, you'll never be able to do anything because the people in power are going to attack you. This is the perfect time for all of those groups to be able to come together, sit down on the table, figure out a concrete plan on how we move forward. And once you do that, let's start putting the street soldiers in the street. And then from there, if you want to bring somebody else in that may cause a problem, then you do it. Because you already got the defiant work. You already done pushed the information out to the people. And now it's up to the people and say that we're going to stand with our leadership.
Well, who's all the other groups that has to formulate the plan?
Never stand with nobody is because they got us in a position to wherever they tell you, no, we don't want him at the table.
Who is all the other groups that have to formulate the plan?
Who is all
the other groups that have to formulate the plan?
I believe in COBRA. I believe December 12th. I believe anyone that has an organization that has dealt with reparations, I would say, for the last 10 years, need to be at that table. From that point in time,
those groups that you just mentioned has already formulated a plan.
Yeah, but the plan, it has to be, see, Richard, and Ronnie, there is a plan, but it has to be now a collective plan, because their plan is not the same plan of what ADOS is talking.
You keep talking about, okay, all right.
What I'm trying to say to you is, and please understand what I'm saying. Before ADOS came on the scene, let's be honest, there was no real talk about reparations on
that's
the level that
true.
It is.
That's
right
not
now.
True. Hey, man, that's not true. You almost sound as bad as the leadership of that group you keep talking about.
Listen to what I'm trying to say, Elliot.
I heard what you just said.
What I'm trying to say is, Elliot, in the media or Twitter.
I don't give a damn about no damn media.
Right. That But you making them the be all and
end all. Come on, are you crazy?
Them the be all the end all.
Well, I don't care nothing about the media.
Okay, let me say this to you.
Let me help you because you. Wait a minute. Wait. I'm gonna turn your mic down. Let me help you with this because you keep talking about media. Let me help you. The pivot point in reparations, the historic pivot point, to me. And I asked one of the brothers who has been on the forefront for a while last week. The historic pivot point was 2001 in Durban, South Africa, at the World Conference on Racism, when the United States and Israel refused to participate. And those groups that you keep talking about that don't have a plan got together and formed language for reparations and to hold nations that were involved in this crime. For number one, it was to get it named a crime against humanity. It's 3 points that they worked on and nailed down at the table. December 12th, in COBRA, MBUF, and members of the Nation of Islam. They sat down at the table and nailed down language. Cynthia McKinney and others was there. They nailed down language that they all agreed to present to the world. Since then, since 2001, several countries, whether in the islands or on the continent, have received reparations based on the language. Oh, in fact, hold it. not only them, other African countries sat down with them also and agreed on the language. And since then, other countries on the continent and the islands have received reparations based on the language agreed upon. The work is here now. Europeans know that the work is here. So they're the only ones happy with all this foolish rhetoric and name calling going back and forth. That's who the winner is, Europeans. The language and the success of what we're talking about was done long before some of the leadership of the group you keep talking about could pee straight or knew anything about any reparations. They might have been playing. They might have been playing. They might have been playing hopscotch on the street.
Elliot, you're saying to me in 18 years, from 2001 to today, we've now gotten to the place to where we are. And I'm saying to you where we really at.
Wait a minute, repeat that again.
Since 2001 to 2019, I'm saying to you where we are today. How is it that if they've done all that work, which they've done, and how is it that all of these things have been in motion, how could you have a group that supposedly has just been doing work for 2 years have been able to come into play and cause this type of friction? You have not been able to shut them down.
Well,
you have not been able to cast them aside to the point to where as you got people going at war with one another. That to me, brother.
Well, you tell me. That might be the $1 million question. You tell me.
Okay. So the million dollar question, I'm sorry to say it, you may disagree, the work ain't really been done. The work ain't really been done. Because to be involved...
That ain't the only answer to the $1 million question. But I ain't going to go into that.
I'm saying. Just let me finish. For you to be involved in something for 18 years, to be at the forefront of something for 18 years, and to have an upstart start to question your motives and what you've done, and in the process not be able to present something better... Something ain't right. I don't relate to that.
Well, listen, this
my whole thing is, if your act is together, nobody can come in and question you. Nobody can say to you, what have you done in those 18 years that is tangible? And when they do say
18
that to
years,
you,
I mean, you keep talking about 18 years. Hey, listen, man.
You know what?
And I'm gonna say this to you because we went overtime. Cam mentioned when that brother called out of New York City the other week and said he wanted to be involved, and Cam told him how he could call him. And I told him about getting involved with the brother here that I didn't know he was a Northeast representative. You don't have to worry about, do they have a plan? Get involved. I done told you this before. The man in the mirror, look at him. Get involved.
Because
we ain't going, the program getting ready to end. The program is getting ready to end. Listen, this is what I'm saying. If you don't like ADOS, and some of the people on the ground, I ain't talking about the leadership. If you don't like them, then get involved with MBUF. Get involved with NCOBRA. Get involved with December 12th. Get involved. Get involved.
Hey, brothers, y'all have a beautiful weekend. We'll wrap on Sunday. Richard, don't lose your keys, please. And Elliot, listen. I hope tomorrow, after your stellar late performance on Wednesday, you have one of the best haircut days you've had in a long time. Next time you got to do an interview, show up on time, please, because you know people got to fix their schedules to be able to listen to your knowledge and wisdom, man.
That wasn't my fault. That was the producer. That was the producer.
No, I'm just messing with you, man. It was good, man. You was good. I had two of my young boys with me listening to you, man. You know, I told them I was gonna rag you tonight about not getting there on time. You know what I mean? But hey, listen, did any business pick up for you after that show?
Well, I mean, I've been there for 20-something years. I wasn't necessarily looking for business to pick up.
No, I didn't think you. I'm not saying you were, but I know that a lot of people heard the show that's in Philly, and I'm hope that a few people walked in there to say, I heard you on the radio, let me get a cut or something like that. That's what I mean.
No, not as of yet.
Because I tell you this, man, that show Wednesday is a classic example of where we at as a people and where we have to go forward. Because from what you said and from what I heard a few days later, they about to hit other cities.
Yeah, well, I saw on social media, somebody said that it's like that in Austin, Texas. So, and Austin is not a major city. So, yeah, they if they haven't hit your city, it's coming.
And I tell you this, they can't do it in Harlem, I don't think, because Harlem just don't have the space available. The prices are too high. They may be able to do it in Brooklyn, even though, to be honest with you, the black community in Brooklyn is being gentrified like crazy. The Bronx, they may be able to do it. Queens, I don't know. Staten Island, I don't know. But I tell you, man, like you were saying, it may happen in Baltimore. It may happen in other places. If we allow for this to happen, I just don't know what to say, man. Because every time I hear about it, and, you know, you first talked about it a couple of months ago, to now for you to get on the radio on a nationwide level like Carl's show, it just shows that the problem is continuous and how disgusting it really is and how, you know, we gotta get ourselves together. Because I tell you, I would never, never, never let them cut my hair. And to be honest with you, I don't know if you do this with your thing. There's a new thing with going to the barbershop in the black community, something about you got to make appointments. But here in the Spanish barbershops, you just walk in there and sit down to a chair open up. I don't know. Do people have to make appointments?
No.
To come to your shop to get their hair cut?
No, they just come in. First come, first serve.
Well, here in Harlem, at a lot of these barber shops, man, they got you making appointments, bro. And to me, that's crazy. But look, man, it was a beautiful night, a lot of information, man. And we just gotta keep moving, man. And thank you for the time. And Richard, don't lose those keys. Talk to y'all on Sunday.
Peace. Interesting show this evening, everybody. Be looking forward to Sunday. Richard?
Yes.
It was interesting tonight.
Yeah.
And a good conversation.
Right. I learned a lot.
Yeah, good conversation. And the struggle continues. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always. And we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of
Nelson Show.
We've got to do something, yeah.
I got Milotion and the gum. Could I also get the morning after pill?
Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah. To save the children, to save the children.